Downing Street, Donald Trump is preparing to make his way to Alaska, which he's managed to describe as being in Russia at least twice this week. And Vladimir Putin is probably rubbing his hands, or indeed his thighs, with glee at the normalization of his regime that Donald Trump's approach provides. Front pages are divided. My favourite is probably no surrender, or indeed protect Ukraine from bluffing Putin, Zelensky urges Trump. But it is one front page, Trump to offer Putin minerals for peace, that perhaps provides the most cause for concern. Do we have to completely rethink Europe?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has arrived at Downing Street for talks with Keir Starmer. It's another display of European support ahead of Donald Trump's one-on-one summit with Vladimir Putin in Alaska tomorrow. Mr. Trump has warned of severe consequences if the Russian leader rejects a ceasefire. Katya Denisova, news editor for the Kyiv Independent, says many Ukrainians are sceptical.
Mainly because these talks will happen without Ukraine and could include a critical issue like Ukrainian territory. And of course, Ukraine wants to see Trump's words and threats backed up by actions. And, you know, Trump's rhetoric still remains inconsistent.
There's been another rise in the proportion of A-level entries awarded the top grades. Hundreds of thousands of school leavers are picking up their marks today, more than 28% of them at A or A star. The number of students accepted onto degree courses has also risen to a record high. A man who faked his death and fled to Scotland has been found guilty of rape in the US. Nicholas Rossi, who claimed to be an Irish orphan who'd never set foot in America, was arrested in 2021. LBC's Fraser Knight has more details.
Rossi had fled to Bristol, where under a fake name he married a woman and moved to Glasgow. But when he was getting treatment for COVID, hospital staff recognised him by his tattoos. After his extradition and a three-day trial, a court in Salt Lake County has found him guilty of rape, and he's set to be tried next month for another charge being brought separately.
The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, has insisted the latest growth figures are an encouraging sign. They show GDP grew by 0.3% between April and June, ahead of economists' expectations. But it's a slowing of the 0.7% growth recorded in the first quarter of the year. The Shadow Chancellor, Mel Stride, has told LBC the economy is clearly struggling.
This poor performance is down to the Chancellor's choices. You know, if you put up taxes on businesses, you destroy growth. If you stoke inflation with lots of borrowing and spending, you keep interest rates higher for longer. And all this, of course, is leading towards the autumn, when I think we can be pretty certain that we're going to be seeing some pretty significant tax increases.
In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was down 5 at 91.59. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 16. LBC weather, most places dry with some very warm sunshine again. A few thundery showers in the north later, a high of 28 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time. A very good morning indeed to you. Volodymyr Zelensky is at Downing Street for a meeting with Keir Starmer, whose performance on the international stage continues to eclipse for many people his performance on the domestic stage. Interesting to hear Mel Stride's comments there about the economy. Do you know that the British economy is currently running about twice as hot as the US one? in terms of growth, roughly double what the US is doing. I just mentioned that because I don't know if anybody else will, but it seems to be an interesting observation, an interesting contribution to the broader discourse. Donald Trump is preparing a variety of offers for Vladimir Putin, according to sources close to Moscow. Rare minerals, rare earth minerals, most obviously. About 10% of the world's lithium deposits reside in Ukrainian soil. Two of the largest currently Ukrainian soil occupied by Russian troops. There is also talk of potentially opening up parts of Alaska, which is American. They bought it off Russia in the last century to exploitation by Russia. There are also suggestions that sanctions could be lifted on some Russian businesses. In other words, Donald Trump is trying to put together a package of sweeteners that will persuade Vladimir Putin to agree to a ceasefire. Rewards, in other words, for invading Ukraine. A ceasefire that Donald Trump, I think at risk of oversimplifying complicated matters, is drawn to chiefly because he thinks it will give him a chance of winning a Nobel Prize. And I don't know the man. You don't know the man. I wonder if anybody knows the man, really. Does he even he know who he is? Does it really keep him awake at night? Is it really his North Star, a Nobel Peace Prize? We know how passionately he harbours grudges. Because not only does the Zelensky animosity go back to 2019 when Zelensky refused to help Donald Trump win an election, but we also know that the mayor of Washington, D.C. probably is the subject of a Donald Trump grudge as well, which explains his slightly unhinged comments earlier this week. We've got some even more unhinged comments from a senator coming up later in the program. But I just don't know. And the problem is that nobody knows. It's not as if you can call in the experts to unravel whatever is going on in Donald Trump's mind, because it changes. It's so mercurial. It seems, however, to be a plausible fit for the available facts, doesn't it? The idea that he is so desperate to win a Nobel Peace Prize that he will give, and also he remains enthralled, doesn't he, to Vladimir Putin. But he's so desperate to win a Nobel Peace Prize that he will give Vladimir Putin whatever it takes to secure a ceasefire. I asked you a couple of days ago that if you could remember what a caller had said on this program and what she had said it in the context of, and it was the post-war settlement of what became known as Czechoslovakia. About us, but without us. And just in the context of things that make you go, the idea of undertaking peace talks with one side, with the invaded side not present. And yes, Donald Trump has said that he hopes for another meeting if this one goes well, at which President Zelensky would be present. But just pause for a minute and wonder how you'd feel if this country had been invaded, or whatever country you are most loyal to. For me, it's the UK. If the UK had been invaded by a completely illegal act of war, and the leader of the, quotes, free world, end quote, was charged with negotiating a peace, and he decided not to invite you to the peace talks. You're negotiating a ceasefire with only one side. It's essentially an admission, we're not going to help Ukraine. We're just going to find out what we need to give Putin to get him to stop. Resistance seems to have left the building some time ago from the US perspective, but not, thankfully, from the European perspective, because, you have to believe that the rearmament that is moving faster than at any point pretty much since the Second World War is the future. And that is where I want to take you, if I may, this morning, or rather where I want you to take me. I wonder how... Is historicity the right word? Probably not. I wonder how much of a grasp of history we have. It depends partly on when you were born. It depends partly on how you were educated. It depends partly on how well informed you are. But the question of when Europe ceased to be the Europe of our history lessons. The Europe of the First World War and the Second World War, most obviously, when it ceased to be tectonic plates of major world military powers, constantly at loggerheads, most obviously France and Germany, with Great Britain, with the UK playing a crucial role historically, but the tensions between France and Germany historically were the defining factors of, well, centuries really, of European existence. Borders move, countries move, regimes change, empires fall, to some perilously close to sounding like I'm appearing in the musical Hamilton. But the thing that never really changed was the military priority of major European powers. They were always equipped for war, usually with each other. And then in the post-war period, things shifted, of course, towards a new paradigm where the Soviet Union was the enemy and the West was united against it. The problem then, when you look at it today, was that the United States of America became the father figure of the West. Galloping to the rescue of the Allies in the Second World War after Pearl Harbor. Of course, we'll mark the anniversary of VJ Day today, this week. And the second point being that Europe happily acquiesced in that process. I wonder if it has something to do with soil. I know that we never had actual invasions. We never had foreign troops on our own soil in the Second World War, but the Blitz was no walk in the park, and the proximity of war, the adjacent nature of war was such that it creates a sense memory among people that turns them off doing it again. It's not a foolproof analysis, that, because the Second World War followed quite fast upon the First World War, but very different factors. So why was Europe prepared to, I don't want to say bend the knee, let's just say to fall into the soft embrace of the United States? It's partly a question of scale. The country was so huge and so rich and so powerful that they assumed it was almost the natural order of things that they would become the leaders of the free world. But the extent to which Europe stepped away from the plate is something that I think has only become clear since Vladimir Putin invaded Crimea. And we woke up nearly just over 10 years ago to realize there wasn't much we could do about it. There wasn't much we could do about it. And by we, I would say the great European powers of old. The French, the Germans, of course, have next to no military capabilities in the period immediately after the Second World War, and most obviously the UK. So allied with and dependent on the United States of America that if you ended up with a president, and I don't think anyone ever thought this would be possible, more aligned with the interests of a Russian ruler than a European ruler, than an actual ally, more allied with the interests of a historical enemy than with the interests of historical allies. Isn't that incredible? An American president who appears, to all intents and purposes, to be more sympathetic to the cause of America's historic enemy, Russia, than he is with the cause or the interests of America's historic allies, i.e. Europe. Again, most obviously, France, Germany, and the United Kingdom. So, we don't know what's going to happen in Alaska, but things you can say with a modicum of certainty include, whatever Vladimir, if he agrees to anything, it won't be worth the paper that it's written on. This is a little bit like FDR travelling to Berlin in the middle of the Second World War and asking Hitler what a ceasefire would involve without asking Winston Churchill what his opinion was. I think that holds. I'm a little bit wary of sweeping analogies. But imagine if FDR arrived in, where would it be? In not quite Berlin, somewhere adjacent, somewhere they just invaded. I don't know. Pick a city, Warsaw. You have the US president arriving in Warsaw to discuss with Adolf Hitler what Adolf Hitler needs to stop the war in Europe. And the person you don't invite to the meeting is Winston Churchill. If anyone's confused as to why that is such an extraordinary sticking point, there's your parallel. Who aren't you inviting to these talks? Oh, we're not inviting Winston Churchill. We're just inviting Hitler. Okay. And what are you offering him? Well, you know, minerals, lithium, lifting some sanctions, give him a bit of Alaska. I don't know. I'm going to find out what he wants. I'm a deal mate. I mean, that's where we are now. And it's not for the first time in recent months. It's extraordinary, isn't it, how quickly the world can turn when you have a menace in charge of both countries. So, where are we? I mean that. I think that if he agrees to anything, Putin, it will be a little bit like the piece of paper that Neville Chamberlain was waving when he came back from Berlin. He may well have signed it, but he won't stand by it. He won't do anything that he doesn't want to do, and he won't do anything against his own interests and his own advancements. And Europe, I don't know how long it would take for Europe to return to a kind of mid-20th century footing when it was actually capable. I mean, a Europe standing strong against Russia without American support is something that I don't even think academics who spend their lives studying this stuff have ever contemplated the possibility of. I'll say it again, because the words slap, don't they? Europe, a united Europe, which of course still exists, despite the best efforts of Johnson, Farage and the rest of them. A united Europe, which Keir Starmer is currently moving mountains to promote. A united Europe standing strong against a rapacious Russia without American support. Is there any other way out of this? 0345 6060 973. And is it a feasible destination? Can you conceive of a world in which a united Europe stands against a rapacious Russia without American support? Because it seems to me that there are, and listen, the phone lines are open. You are pick as many holes as you want in my own analysis. It is at the very least amateurish. But you're either going to get Vladimir Putin being made an offer he can't refuse, regardless of what Ukraine wants, and you can't have a ceasefire if only one side has agreed to it. Or you're going to get a nothing burger. Whatever they announce and whatever happens, nothing is going to change. The escalation of offences by Russian troops this week suggests that Putin isn't really minded to hang up his warmongering anytime soon. Or you, then of course, if you get that stalemate, nothing burger, call it what you will, then the question of what happens next becomes absolutely crucial. And I think we spent years thinking, well, I mentioned Francis Fukuyama to you many times recently, thinking it was all over, thinking that war was over, that history had ended, that the notion of tracking humanity by looking at the flashpoints, the great powers that line up against each other, whether it's Russia against France or Germany against the UK or whatever it is, China against Japan, the idea that liberal democracy had prevailed so completely and communism had contained itself in some corners of the world, that the notion of human history being a history of flashpoint and war was over and we were going to be entering an extraordinary new period. That's what almost everybody believed when the Berlin Wall came down, that we've entered a new period, especially in Europe and America. We've entered a new period of consensus and peace, and we will no longer need to be defined by the need to defend ourselves against an aggressor. In the first half of the 20th century, Germany. In the second half of the 20th century, Russia. I think those days are over, aren't they? And I don't know what the future looks like. 0345 6060 973. Do we need a Europe that is strong and steadfast and passionately opposed to Vladimir Putin's Russia? And what does that even look like? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. What do you think's going to happen in Alaska? You can have a swing at that, because your thoughts are as valuable as anybody else's. But if, as seems likely, not a lot happens, what's next for Europe? What is next for Europe? And I want you to come at this from the East and the West. If you're Polish or Estonian, or you have connections with those countries, Lithuania, former Soviet states, what's next for Europe? Because I think the other thing you can say with a degree of certainty is that Putin's never finished. Putin's never finished. Crimea led inexorably towards Kyiv because we didn't stop him helping himself to Crimea. He thought he'd be able to help himself to the rest of Ukraine. And everybody was surprised when he failed to do so, except the Ukrainian people. The rest of us sort of sitting there wondering what's going to happen. I still think, by the way, that if that had happened quickly, if Kyiv had fallen as quickly as Putin expected it to, we wouldn't be having conversations like this yet. You'd have to wait until Putin made his next move before you'd start asking, what's Europe going to do about this? And of course, when Crimea was invaded, the idea of America not being in lockstep with Europe against Russian aggression was absolutely unthinkable. It was entirely absurd. But this is the world we live in now. The United States is not a reliable ally. It is anything but, actually, a reliable ally. We have, sadly, cut ourselves off from Europe in many ways, but not in the most important ways of all. And that is why I want you to tell me what you think happens next. What happens next in the whole of Europe? And it may well be that I need a history lesson. It may well be that you're the person to provide it. 0345-6060-973 is the number you need.
LBC.
LBC is investigating the impact of over-tourism. Sheila Fogarty was joined by the UK General Manager at Intrepid Travel, Joanna Reeve.
Over-tourism is excess negative impact on a destination, something that negatively impacts the local community. We want to tackle the problem, not just pick it up and move it somewhere else. Mm. For us, our how is very much around small intimate groups.
Listen back to the full interview, thanks to Intrepid Travel, on the LBC app.
Introducing the Ford Capri, rewired for the electric age. And now you could win one. Take a test drive in the new all-electric Capri to enter. And you could win the Icon Rewired. Search Win a Ford Capri. Go electric with Ford. To enter, book a test drive online by 31st August and complete by 30th September. T's and C's apply. 25 plus only. For details, see ford.co.uk.
The seagull says, your IKEA food favorites are now available in Brighton. Meatballs, plant balls, fish and chips. All delicious. Especially the chips. Yum. IKEA Brighton, open 14th of August. IKEA, the wonderful everyday.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345-6060-973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 22 minutes after 10. What, then, is the new world order? My apologies to Canada. Yes, I'm apologising to the whole country for excluding them from this conversation because they feel closer now to Europe than they do to the United States of America, not geographically, but politically, diplomatically, and possibly militarily. What happens now? What happens in a world where the United States is not a trusted ally of European countries and Russia remains the sworn enemy? What actually happens? Thomas is in Worcester. Thomas, what would you like to say?
Hi, good morning. Thank you very much for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I believe this situation really needs some sort of an Eastern European perspective put into the mix.
For sure.
And a good starting point for the conversation would actually be the year 1920 and the Russian invasion of Poland. Mm. Okay, I know it's a bit of a stretch, but something similar happened over then there as well.
Yes. So on I don't think it's a stretch at all. I don't think it's a stretch at all.
You know, on one side, we have Russian Bolsheviks trying to sweep through the whole Europe, right? On the other side, we have a war-torn and a tired little country called Poland. And suddenly, in this whole mix, shows up a person called George Curzon, who was the British foreign minister by the time. And suddenly he goes, we should have a border right through here.
Yes.
And it's quite, you know, you can see the similarities in the situation because nobody really invited him. He wasn't really that, like, 100% super invested, unlike Donald Trump and Western allies today, maybe. But he got both rejected by both sides, and we continued with our merry Eastern European happy business of killing each other, right? So,
he proposed a line, didn't he? And as you say, everybody rejected it. I don't think it was just him. I think...
No, he had like a whole team of people and some other politicians supporting that. But my main point in here would be is that, look, this is not our first rodeo, I mean, for Eastern Europeans, okay? We've been trying to do that for 700 years. It's Russians invading Poland, Poland invading Russia, Poland invading Ukraine, Ukraine trying to fight back whoever. It's like the always been like that in Eastern Europe, okay? And we understand that you can only speak to Russians when they're when their last soldier is incapacitated, and the only language they understand is the language of violence. So they're still pushing. Therefore, whatever they will agree to, it's not going to be a peace talk, it's going to be a pit stop. Because we all understand that they need to be stopped permanently, and only after that you can have any sort of sensible peace talks with them.
And what does stopping permanently look like?
I would imagine they
and remember this is in a world where the United States is no longer a reliable ally of Poland or the UK or any European country.
Well, forgive me the bitter words, James, but from our perspective to the West, there are no reliable allies.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, we are a little bit in a fresh situation when the West says they will do something and they actually deliver. So that's a very keen and welcome surprise, but essentially, we've always had the perspective that we are on our own, and we have to keep pushing as long as possible.
While I have you, I mean, the question you prompt in my mind is what does the average Brit need to understand about your part of the world in order to have a better grasp of what is going on vis-a-vis Ukraine? But you're kind of already answering that question. How do you account for Russia's historic hunger for territory? Because, I mean, it typifies 19th century politics, 19th century history. And of course, when it comes to empires, very few people can teach the British any lessons. But that hunger, that undying, that unquenchable hunger for territory, where does that come from? How do you account for that?
I think that the biggest difference between Russians and Eastern Slavs and Westerns and Western Slavs is that Russia has never been touched by humanism, actually. Okay,
Humanism.
16th century and the, you know, the human-centric view of the world.
Right, yes.
They didn't have the Renaissance. Therefore, human life has a much bigger worth in the West than it has in the East.
Okay.
In the East, your perception of self comes from the collective. You know, so we are proud because we as a nation achieve things. Whereas in the West, pride kind of emerges from your achievements as a person being contributed to the bigger picture.
Gosh, individualism as well.
That is completely missing from Russia and from the East for them. It's like they yearn for this power because when they were Soviet Union, they had, you know, 20 or however many satellites around them making them feel proud. And right now, they have none. So this is literally what they're trying to do. They're trying to restore the glory of the, you know, the Russian Empire. And I don't think I need to elaborate on how toxic this mindset is.
No, and it leads to my final question to you, which is what do you think, where do you think we're going to be this time next week?
Same place, really. I mean, I honestly believe that when President Trump says something is white, I will definitely bet on black.
Yes.
I don't think he's a credible actor in this show whatsoever. I mean, I appreciate what President Zelensky is doing, but you have to understand he's doing his best because really not a lot, there's not a lot he can do in regards of the war itself. You know, he has generals for that. So his job is to run around the world, run the trumpet, wrap up support, and meanwhile, his generals will do the best they can in order to defend their homeland. So,
I've enjoyed learning from you. I'm a little more qualified on the parallels that John is drawing with Irish history. Zelensky's going to end up in the same place as Michael Collins did in 1921, when he was effectively forced to concede to Lloyd George and Churchill that peace would only come if Collins agreed to the partition of Ireland. That's kind of Curzon line that worked, a Curzon line that happened, because a refusal would unleash a long and terrible war. What I know, I said final question, Thomas, but I'm really grateful for your insights. What is unsustainable for Zelensky, do you think? If you think of his fingers being in a vice, what is the point at which he can take no more?
See, I think that our perception of unsustainable is completely different from yours, because going even further in history, right? 19th century, Russia occupies all of Poland and Ukraine, with some bit given back to the West. We were under occupation for 120 years, and there were 8 uprisings during that time. So even if all of Ukraine gets occupied, that's not the end of the conflict. That's just the end of the official war mindset. So we need to arrive to a conclusion where both sides are happy, and that is only going to happen when Russians drop their imperialistic mindset. So I really applaud what our Ukrainian brothers and sisters are doing. They're really brave and strong people. But, you know, President Zelensky, this struggle is very strong, but it's not going to define he's the face behind the process. But even if the face disappears, the process continues.
Wow. You set the bar incredibly high, Thomas, and you've also made up for my rather stumbling and amateurish attempts at analysing the situation. Thank you so much. The time is 10:30. The question is pretty simple, but the answer is anything but. What happens in the world if the United States is no longer a reliable ally for Europe and Volodymyr Zelensky is not persuaded that Vladimir Putin, in the unlikely event of him agreeing to any form of ceasefire, that Vladimir Putin can be trusted? Parallels with history. Michael Collins and Adolf Hitler popping up in some of your comments. Thomas Watts is here now with the headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer is hosting Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky for talks at Downing Street. The meeting comes ahead of Donald Trump's face-to-face discussions with his Russian counterpart in Alaska tomorrow. The Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson, has told LBC there has been a steadying of the ship after exam disruption during the pandemic. Hundreds of thousands of school leavers are picking up their A-level, T-level and BTEC results this morning. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, says the latest growth figures show the economy is beating expectations. There was a 0.3% rise in GDP between April and June. That's higher than predicted, but below the 0.7% rise in the first quarter. LBC weather, dry for many with some more warm sunshine, a few thundery showers developing in the north, a high of 28 degrees.
This is LBC.
Pump 6 in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Ever on a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6. T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Who's a good human? Jenny is, because Jenny will always do what's best for Bertie, her bestie Bassett. So if Bertie needs to go and wee, that's what they're going to do. Even if it is 3 a.m. and it's raining cat lots. That's why she also chooses Butternut Box for Bertie's meals. Freshly prepared, served straight from the fridge, and conveniently delivered right to your door. At a time that suits you for once. Hey, Jenny.
Oh.
Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
Make the O2 your playground this summer. Test your football skills at Toka Social. Take to the skies at iFly indoor skydiving. Or challenge your friends at Boom Battle Bar. Let the kids burn off energy at Oxygen Active Play. Perfect your game at Paddle Social Club. Or test your reflexes in the world of Activate. There's something for everyone at the O2. Feeling hungry? Choose from over 30 bars and restaurants and discover flavors from around the world. Search Do More at the O2 to start planning your perfect day.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 10:33 and it's seismic, isn't it? That's probably an overused word, but it is seismic, the idea of a world in which the United States is no longer a reliable ally of European powers and in which the United States has absolved itself of military responsibility for peace in our time. for peace in Europe. I mean, two institutions, two organisations essentially dedicated to ensuring that there was never a repeat of European war, which we, of course, somewhat arrogantly describe as world wars. And that was the European Union and the United States of America, the two biggest bulwarks against imperial aggression from originally Germany and latterly Russia. And they worked really, really well. That's what Winston Churchill envisioned when he dreamt of a united Europe, is that you can't go to war with each other and you can defend collectively against an external threat. The first bit's still true. The prospect of European countries going to war against each other, even with the far right on the march in Germany, in France, in the UK, is minimal to non-existent. But the threat from without is greater than ever. You have European soil being invaded. European soil, of course, occupied currently by a sovereign country that really wants to be in the European Union and in NATO. And I need probably to remind you at this point that there are quislings and traitors in this country who seek to justify Vladimir Putin's invasion of Crimea and indeed his attempted invasion of the rest of Ukraine by somehow trying to blame the European Union and NATO, which is what an apologist for Adolf Hitler would have sounded like in 1939 and 1940. But what does the world look like? I mean, what do we do in a world where Europe is under threat from outside and the United States is no longer a trusted, it's no longer an ally? That's the mad thing. For all the fishing trips that David Lammy, without a license for his rod, has gone on with J.D. Vance and the cozying up that Keir Starmer has done in the Oval Office, the United States is no longer an ally. Donald Trump's America would not do anything to help us unless there was something in it for him. The idea of there being some sort of moral role is absurd. I was thinking more of the First World War when I talked about it being a European war than the Second World War. But the whole point about peace in our time was centered on Europe. The idea that's where these wars start. And if you can guard against that happening again, then the world becomes a much safer place. And without America by our side, I don't know how we can guard against it happening again. 0345 6060973 is the number you need. Gemma is in Guildford. Gemma, what would you like to say?
Oh, it got me rattled when you were talking about this, because I see this as a multifaceted issue for not just our country, for any country. Mm. But having worked in the police, counterterrorism, and the Russian side of things fascinated me. So I've read up quite a bit about it.
Yes.
What nobody seems to notice or even wants to acknowledge is that Putin has been very vocal in his books or books written down about what he wants.
Yes.
He wants the USSR back together. That's his ultimate dream, and he will stop at nothing. So to concede on Zelensky's part, to let him have the land that he's invaded, will only encourage him to have a pit stop. He will then carry on and go back to all of those places that were part of the USSR. And if he can push further, he will, because he has no issue other than his own is to gratify himself that he has got the magnificent USSR back together.
And I mean, it's always hard to separate the individual from the institutional, isn't it? It's also the only way that this sort of notion of perpetual war and reigniting the dreams of the Soviet Union is the only way he stays out of jail, or the only way he keeps all the money that he's stolen from the Russian people.
Yeah.
So there's always a selfish dimension to it as well. But,
definitely. But on the other hand,
yes.
What are we teaching our children? We are teaching our children that bullies can storm into our playground. They can hit us, they can punch us, they can knife, they can do whatever they like, and they will get away with it because we're not standing up to bullies. With or without America, with their own bully, I think he would come into it because he's come into it as the massive peacemaker and make a massive song and dance about it by saying, I'm only coming in to help because, you know, you need me, etc., etc. It plays on his vanity of wanting to be this great president.
Well,
which
it's worse in a way. Because, I mean, if the Telegraph's reporting is correct, and I think it probably is, he's essentially turning up with a goodie bag.
Yeah.
For Vladimir Putin in the hope of getting a Chamberlain-type commitment to peace, which wouldn't be worth the paper that it's written on.
But it's like someone coming in from another country and telling us we've got to give up territory. It's not going to happen. Donald Trump is as much as a bully as Vladimir Putin and any other of the despots that are ruining their countries by their dictatorship.
And on it goes. So where does it leave Europe?
I think it leaves Europe in a mess. However,
you're not winning any prizes for that insight.
However, the UN was built for a purpose, to help stop these things from going any further.
Yes.
The problem is they've never had to get to the point where they actually have to bite and fight back. And I don't think they've got the, excuse me, the balls to do it. I think they're
the
all
minerals.
Going to find a way of bucking away. Yeah.
Yes.
That's what they're after, is the minerals and whatever. But, you know, these people are killing people every day. But we're standing by and watching it happen all over again. And again and again. It may be Russia, it may be whatever country. And you can liken it to Israel and Palestine. I'm going to get shot down for this.
No,
but
you're not.
Originally, in Israel, when British were making the rules about what land you can have or whatever, they drew the line and said, right, that's yours, that's yep. Palestine. What did Israel do? They pushed further and further and further. And now we've ended up with, they want that final strip.
Oh, they also, they also retaliated against an invasion. That is a large part of how
but
some of the land...
But they're all as bad as each other, aren't they? Well, they never learn.
Well, I think that you will win a prize for. They never learn. That's a lesson that holds true throughout history. And of course, to win the Cliché of the Day award, those who do not learn from history are condemned forever to repeat it. Gemma, thank you. And I don't know. I don't think anybody knows what the Europe looks like, absent America, absent the United States of America. This is quite interesting from Elise. I never understood how the EU and the US just stood idly by while Russia invaded and claimed Crimea. I do. All you can do is support resistance. There's absolutely nothing you can do if Vladimir Putin decides to invade your country except resist or not resist. Those are your two choices. And if you resist, then your allies can help a bit, but they can't send troops in or a full military presence, because then it sounds hyperbolic, but you are in the foothills of a world war. So the only reason why we're in this situation now is because Putin miscalculated horribly on how effective Zelensky's resistance would be. And Europe, I think the biggest mystery, perhaps, is why Europe is still not doing more to help Zelensky. And I think that's probably what keeps him awake at night. Thank you, Gemma. Lisa is in Southampton. Lisa, what would you like to say?
Yeah, I've called in before, and this is very personal to me because my daughter-in-law is Lithuanian, and I've been there several times, and my son and daughter-in-law just came back yesterday from visiting friends. But, you know, people don't realize, Trump doesn't realize, and American people don't realize the history behind countries like the Baltic countries.
Yeah.
When you go to Lithuania, you will see Ukrainian flags everywhere. You will see in every history museum, Ukraine features, because they all used to be part of a Commonwealth of Nations. And also, the Lithuanians know what it's like to be invaded. They were taken over by the Germans, by the Russians, and they just want to be, those countries want to help Ukraine because they want to remain independent. They, you know, they're a very, very talented people. Estonia is the tech capital of Europe. Vinted comes from Lithuania. Latvia is extremely successful. These countries are worried, and they're really very frightened.
And they've got centuries of precedent to justify their worries.
Well, absolutely. But don't forget, there are still a lot of Russians in these Baltic countries.
Yes.
And they are very vocal. And there are some people in these Baltic countries that would like to remain. They're not that upset what Putin's doing. So you've got that factor as well, because, you know, they didn't all just disappear, the Russians.
I mean, how do you process the fact that we're conducting a conversation based upon the premise that the United States is no longer an ally of European powers?
Well, obviously, as American, I feel very sad.
Yeah.
Because I think we've let people down. And we've let people down because of our sheer ignorance. You know, we did it in World War I. We didn't get involved in World War II. We're basically an isolationist nation who likes to come out when it suits us. And this doesn't suit us, because people don't know about these countries. They don't know the history. So therefore, it's easy for them to not be bothered. You know, it's easy because, you know, they don't know what's going on. They don't realize that most Americans, their roots are in Europe. My grandparents came from Germany, Greece, and Czech Republic. And so we all have roots in America to Europe. And this is what surprises me so much. This is what surprises me. Even Trump has roots in Europe.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think he feels them very keenly, except perhaps when he's playing golf. What do you think? Where do you think we'll be next week?
I think that it's going to be basically it's going to be really awful because nothing's going to get done. Zelensky, they're going to be talking. I don't even think they'll be talking about land the first meeting. I think he just wants a quick meeting, a second meeting, and then they start. How can he give away land? Trump give away land without Zelensky? And Zelensky is going to say no. And then we're going to be back to square one. And I think Europe is going to have to deal with it because we can't trust America.
Well, I'd go further, probably. I think Trump is likely to strengthen Putin. Well, in many ways, he already has strengthened Putin's hand, even by having this meeting and having it, Putin should be arrested when he lands on American soil.
Well, yes, because the U.S. is signed up. Basically, he shouldn't be allowed to come to Alaska. Mm. And Alaska, of all places, when we bought that from the Russians, it's amazing to me.
Whose idea do you think that was, to have it in Alaska?
I think it may be geographically because it was halfway between the two countries. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know why. I mean, Anchorage. I've been to Anchorage. Mm. Anchorage, is it even actually, have they been able to do all the security that's needed for something like this?
That's true. You asked what I think is going to happen. I think Trump will announce something shiny, and by tea time on Tuesday, it will be clear that it doesn't exist.
Well, yeah, and what do you think is going to happen with Europe? Do you think we will make, except for Hungary won't go for it, do you think we would make Ukraine a NATO country?
I don't know. Is the short
answer. If we did, then we'd protect them.
And that's why I use these phrases that sound a bit hyperbolic, but the foothills of another world war, or the foothills certainly of a European war. I suppose the absence of America makes it less likely to become technically a world war. But yeah, I think that is why the conversation is jarring, because people who get it, like you and like Thomas and like Gemma and other callers, people who get it really cannot exaggerate the stakes. You can't say you're overthinking it, or the stakes aren't that high. The stakes could not be higher. And you've got Donald Trump wading into negotiation mode. Donald Trump, the guy, I don't know if you've heard him talking about grass recently, but Donald Trump, this man has in many ways, and again, please, if I've got a hyperbole alarm in the studio, let's hope it goes off, but this guy is the guy on whom world peace currently depends.
We're doing that and doing some other things, and we're going to also fix up a place called Washington, D.C. We're going to make it so beautiful again. We're going to be redoing the parks, redoing the grass. You know, grass is a lifetime, like people have a lifetime. And the lifetime of this grass has long been gone when you look at the parks where the grass is all tired, exhausted. We're going to redo the grass with the finest grasses. I know a lot about grass because I own a lot of golf courses, and if you don't have good grass, you're not in business very long, Lindsey Graham. By the way, you have very good poll numbers, Lindsey. I just saw. Congratulations.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
The Chancellor is trying to find new ways of clawing more money out of your pocket this time as you enter the ground. The inheritance tax changes would see more people fall into having to pay inheritance tax. It sees people as a number at the bottom of a spreadsheet rather than the hard work, energy and effort that has gone up into building you into a position where you have got a fair chunk of money in your pension pot, or you have got a house that through no work of your own has suddenly risen from 175 grand to 1.2 million. Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
Body pain might not sound like this.
Oh.
Or this.
Oh.
But it might sound like this.
I'm fine.
Hiding your body pain behind a smile? Let us help. With up to 12 hours of uninterrupted muscle and joint pain relief. Voltarol, the joy of movement. Voltarol Joint and Back Pain Relief 2.3% gel contains diclofenac diethylammonium. Always read the label.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including well man, well woman, well baby, and well kid. From Boots, pharmacies, and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
Train to Bedford with the crew for a music festival. Scenes!
Georgie, is this too much glitter?
Yep, lost them. Bored off to get drinks on my own. It's okay, find the flag with the DJ and cat. Oh, there they are. Back on the train, glitter gone, feet destroyed. Totally worth it. Oh, I can't wait to post this selfie of us. Download the Thameslink Railway app to book tickets and save one third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
It's official. We're the littlest on price, which have crowned us the cheapest supermarket this July, beating seven other supermarkets, including their loyalty prices. For the littlest prices, you know you can always rely on us. Now that's big on quality and always little on price.
Findings based on independent price comparison of 76 items by which every day in July 2025.
As a small business owner, you've got to be ready for the ups and the downs. Ready to think on your feet, ready to be rushed off your feet, ready to make the big decisions and make the tea. Two sugars in mind? Ta. Ready to be there for your customers whenever they need you? Well, ditto. Virgin Media Broadband's ready for anything business can throw at it. Yeah, it's business ready broadband. Search Virgin Media Business Broadband.
Just drop me off around the corner. It's a phrase no parent wants to hear, especially when it's about your car. So upgrade to a new 75-plate electric model they'll love to be seen in at the BYD Back to School sales event. From the 15th to the 25th of August, enjoy up to £1,100 off selected BYD models, plus up to 5 years free servicing. Visit your local BYD retailer and make the school run electric. T's and C's apply.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10 to 11, that clip of Donald Trump was from this week. I wonder how many books would have been written by now if it was Joe Biden's cognitive decline that was on such stark display. But of course, he's not alone. He runs a government, an administration, and one member of it is a chap called Steve Feinberg, who is the Deputy Secretary of Defence. And again, I'm conscious of hyperbole. I don't want to flirt with hyperbole. Here is the Deputy Secretary of Defence, Stephen Feinberg, being quizzed by an American senator called Tammy Duckworth about the Russian invasion of Ukraine.
Can you tell me if Russia invaded Ukraine? Mr. Feinberg? I mean, Mr. Hegseth said it.
Yeah, I understand.
It's easy. Yes or no? Did they invade Ukraine?
I don't feel that I should publicly comment in the middle of a tense negotiation when I'm not privy to the facts to undermine what potentially...
You're not privy to the fact whether or not Russia invaded Ukraine and started a war that's lasted for 3 years?
I'm not privy to the details of what's going on in the negotiation between Russia and Ukraine, what the sensitivities are, what the president's trying to accomplish. So I'd be afraid to speak out of turn and undermine that. I do have confidence that the president... He's very skillful. He's the first guy that brought Russia to the table.
The president is kneeling down to Vladimir Putin. I cannot believe the commander-in-chief of the greatest military on the face of the earth in my lifetime is bowing down to Russia.
There it is. That's a U.S. senator quizzing the deputy secretary for defense in February of this year. I, you know, if you can't even agree that Russia invaded Ukraine, what is actually going on? I do not know. Adrian's in Doncaster. Adrian, what would you like to say?
I am in reference to the whole debate. Is war imminent with the Russians? No, I don't think so. Yeah. Do we need to increase the budget to 3.5%? Yes, we do.
What do you think Europe is going to look like if Donald Trump continues to abandon us? And Vladimir Putin continues to invade or continues to conduct war against sovereign states?
I don't think Donald Trump will abandon us totally because we're like the buffer.
Well,
yeah.
Hang on a minute. This is his Deputy Secretary of State for Defense being asked whether or not Russia invaded Ukraine.
Can you tell me if Russia invaded Ukraine? Mr. Feinberg? I mean, Mr. Hegseth said it.
Yeah, I understand.
It's easy, yes or no. Did they invade Ukraine?
I don't feel that I should publicly comment in the middle of a tense negotiation when I'm not privy to the facts to undermine what potentially...
You're not privy to the fact whether or not...
What abandonment looks like in your world, Adrian, but that sounds pretty bad for Ukraine and therefore for Europe.
I've never heard of the guy, to be honest, James, but 2014 they invaded...
Crimea and Ukraine 2 years ago.
Yeah, so it's 2014 that the actual war started. here we are in 20.
No, it's not, because the resistance of the invasion of Ukraine is when the war started. The invasion may have begun with Crimea in 2014, but the war that we're current, the ceasefire that they're negotiating, had nothing to do with Crimea, sadly, because it wasn't resisted.
I don't think there'll be a ceasefire.
I think we can agree on that. 10:54 is the time, but I think they might announce one. It's extraordinary to hear that clip, isn't it? I don't know whether it's a cowardice on his part, he's frightened of upsetting the president, or whether it's something more sinister, something more simple. But you can't get past the idea that of two things. Number one, senior members of Donald Trump's administration can't even admit that Russia invaded Ukraine. Number two, they're currently having a ceasefire negotiation without the invaded country being represented at the table. I'm sticking with my Hitler analogy. I think we sometimes overreach, we overuse Hitler analogies, but it is as if FDR arrived on neutral territory in 1942 to negotiate a ceasefire with Adolf Hitler, and Winston Churchill was stuck back in Downing Street. 10:55 is the time. David's in King's Cross. David, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I'd just like to say that Russia is a bankrupt economy, which is smaller than Italy, and they couldn't even invade 10% of their nearest neighbour. So whilst they're a terrible nuisance and Hitler is Putin is a nasty, murderous dictator who will always do what he does, he doesn't have any resources or ability to get beyond 10% of his nearest neighbour. So he can't get into any other European countries. Europe is twice the size of him in terms of people, three times the size of him in terms of army, and seven times the size of him in terms of GDP. He's an annoyance, and he's horrible, but he's not going to go anywhere else in Europe.
I think almost every Eastern European listening would disagree with you. I think it may be a more emotional legacy, but the historic threat posed by a rampant Russia to all of those countries in the Baltic states and beyond is not so easily dismissed, I don't think, David.
No, his army is devastated. They're literally being wiped out in Ukraine, in 10% of his nearest neighbour. He hasn't got the ability.
Without the States and China, for example, Europe has no strategic bombers. It's got the world's largest stockpile of nuclear weapons. Admittedly, that is unlikely to come into play. About 1 million active duty personnel, even now, after the losses in Ukraine, and about 2 million reservists. I mean, they're not exactly in danger of disappearing, are they?
Who, the Europeans or the Russians?
This is the Russians that I'm describing.
Yes, but the Russians have got a bankrupt economy and a flattened army, so they're not going to invade anybody else.
It's very optimistic, but one of the reasons for the Second World War was how the appalling state of the German economy post-reparation. So I don't think you can say, the situation at home is so bad that they're not going to have any imperial ambitions overseas. I don't see it, but I hope you're right. What do you think is going to happen this weekend? Where do you think we're going to be next week?
Well, the point is that Putin has got something over Trump. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I do believe that. Trump is therefore kowtowing to him, like trying to appease the bully. So nothing's going to happen. Trump won't help us while he's president, but the next American president probably will.
You are a very glass half full character, David. I
really am. and Putin is just going to keep rattling away, trying to make himself look big. Trump can't deal with him, so we're in stalemate for another 3 or 4 years.
We say stalemate. Of course, Ukraine sees more carnage, more death, more blood being spilt. It's coming up to 10:58. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. That's the problem, in that you can normally make an intelligent guess, or you can have an informed analysis of what is possible, what is plausible, what is feasible, and what is likely. But with Donald Trump in the room, the head of an administration whose senior members can't even concede that Russia invaded Ukraine, how do you even get past that? Let alone to the point where the negotiation is being conducted without anybody present from the country that has actually been invaded. And then you factor in the reports of Donald Trump turning up effectively with goodie bags for Vladimir Putin, and David's observation, which is incredibly popular, that because it's Occam's razor, isn't it? I don't know that I agree that he has got something on Trump. I used to think it was obvious because it was thrown up by Occam's razor. You know, the simplest explanation is usually the correct one. How on earth can Donald Trump find himself so supine before Vladimir Putin, a historic enemy of the United States of America? And the answer becomes, well, because he's frightened that Putin is going to reveal something about him. But I set that up against the Fifth Avenue paradigm. You know, the guy honestly believes with much justification, even more justification now than he had when he said it, that he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and not lose a single vote. There is one area of potential criminality or malfeasance in which I don't think Donald Trump would be bomb-proof, and that is why the Epstein story continues to be so interesting and febrile, and something from which he appears to be very, very desperate to distract attention. But then you are beginning to move into conspiracy theory territory. Where will we be next week? Well, I won't be here, actually, so we won't be able to pick over the bones of whatever is agreed together, but I suspect the consensus from callers is correct.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, the man accused of driving into a crowd at Liverpool's Victory Parade is facing a further 24 charges. More than 100 people were injured during the Premier League title celebrations in May. LBC's Chris Chambers reports.
Paul Doyle has been told today that he will face 24 new charges, including 23 of assault and one of affray, taking the total to 31. Six of the new offences relate to children, including one six-month-old and one of seven-months-old. Doyle was in tears as he appeared over a video link, and the case has been adjourned until September the 4th. Chris Chambers, LBC, Liverpool.
The Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has held talks with Keir Starmer at Downing Street. It was another display of European support ahead of Donald Trump's summit with Vladimir Putin in Alaska tomorrow. The Prime Minister says Britain stands ready to increase pressure on Moscow if necessary. More than 28% of A-level entries were awarded A or A-star grades this year, remaining above pre-pandemic highs. The number of students accepted onto degree courses has also risen to a record level. Hundreds of thousands of school leavers are picking up their A-level, T-level and BTEC results today. The Education Secretary has told LBC that teachers cannot insist people refer to them using gender-neutral titles. Bridget Phillipson has again confirmed staff can request pupils and staff call them Mix instead of Mr. or Mrs. She says a range of viewpoints must be treated with respect. Ms. Phillipson was also pressed on long-awaited guidance for schools, but wouldn't say when it'll be published.
Of course, teachers can make that request, but they can't insist that people follow that request. I think it is an important distinction to draw. Around guidance, the guidance that the previous government were consulting on was guidance around gender-questioning children. So that is more about how we support children and young people with their well-being. We will publish guidance.
The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, has insisted the latest GDP figures are a positive sign for the economy. Growth slowed to 0.3% between April and June. That was better than expected, but down from the 0.7% in the first quarter. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading down 3 at 91.62. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 16. LBC weather dry for most places with some very warm sunshine, thundery showers developing further north. A high of 28 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Minutes after 11 is the time. I want to return to some territory that we explored together yesterday, but I want to return to it from a very, very unexpected angle. So, as I suggested, that investigation by our colleague Emma Corr, our colleague in Surrey, has rather blown up other media organisations picking up on the time that she spent with undercover officers out jogging in order to collar and caution, and in some cases even arrest, men who were... the phrase used is catcalling, which I always think sounds a little bit inadequate. So we'll go with harass. Harass? Harass? It's one of those words, isn't it? How do you pronounce it? I say harass, but sometimes I catch myself saying harass. Harassment. Harass. Harass? Harris? Harass. Mrs. Harris went to Paris. Harass. And it was an interesting conversation yesterday. It wasn't the best hour of the show, and that's partly my fault, possibly because I'm a man, and I set the story up through male eyes with a male mouth, and it's a very, very female story. Unless I was a man who was in the business of harassing joggers, then I don't know that I have anything interesting to bring to the conversation. But other journalists have stepped into the breach, and there is a truly extraordinary piece in the Times today. It's not often I do a sort of double take at a newspaper article, unless it's an unhinged headline. But this just... And I should probably apologise in advance to Australian listeners, because it obviously means I subscribe to some stereotypes about Australians that are deeply unfair and completely untrue. I presumed, when we were having this conversation yesterday, that it was an almost universal condition. That it was not... I know we're only supposed to be concerned about the men in this country that Robert Jenrick is xenophobic about. But obviously, this is a problem that is endemic to masculinity. And because it's endemic to masculinity, I thought it was universal. So if you'd said to me, I am in Bordeaux, it would be as likely that you'd get harassed while running as if you were in Birmingham, if you were in Barcelona. I'm thinking of various cities that begin with B. If you were in Bonn, if you were in anything else, Brighton. I think we had a caller from Brighton, actually. So I just caught myself this morning realizing that I presume this was happening everywhere. And the Times has a really interesting piece by a journalist called Katie Strick, who moved to Australia quite recently, where she has experienced this sort of harassment precisely never. It's extraordinary. She says, I ran past my first white van after moving to Sydney, and I didn't hear a single comment about my looks, my speed, or needing to cheer up. Then it happened again, this time in the most classic of catcalling spots, or at least it would have been back in London, a row of large stationary vehicles waiting for the traffic lights, complete silence. For my third run, I did something I'd rarely felt brave enough to do back in my days running the circumference of Clapham Common. I wore shorts, still nothing. I was almost offended. That's obviously tongue-in-cheek. But you begin to wonder whether it's personal or whether it's actually cultural. In Australia, and listen, the plural of anecdote is not data, but she's raised these observations with a mixture of expats and Aussies, all in their 20s and 30s, and they all reported that they never get harassed while out running. They can be carefree in short shorts and sports bras, learning that they didn't need to tense up anymore whenever a large vehicle came past. And Australian boyfriends of British girls were very surprised to hear about what experiences happened to them at home. Again, I've apologised to my Australian listeners. Brisbane, Birkenhead, Belfast. Thank you, everybody, for sending in cities that begin with B. And it prompts this question. What is it about British culture, exactly, that seems to have allowed behaviour like this to become the accepted norm? And Spain is cited as well. In Spain, whether it's because of Catholic culture, and they introduced a law in 2022, but so did the French, and the French law hasn't really worked. You're much more likely to experience this sort of behaviour in France than you are in other European cities. Spain, almost overnight, has gone from being worse than Germany, France, Italy and the UK to having next to none of it, because it has it introduced a change in law. But I think for the purposes of our conversation, we'll confine it mostly to a comparison of Australia and Britain. And it is, so we covered yesterday the anatomy of this kind of abuse, the anatomy of this kind of behaviour. The Times also features a couple of first-person pieces by female journalists based in Britain about what they routinely encounter, and it's identical to what we were hearing yesterday. You know, from the relatively routine and borderline innocuous, but the attention is unwanted, so it's never innocuous, right through to the really unpleasant. One thing I didn't even know was a thing where you rev the engine of your car as a woman is jogging across the road as a sort of threat or an announcement, and then you laugh uproariously with your mates in the vehicle if she flinches or jumps. But the question of why it doesn't happen in Australia and it does happen here is absolutely fascinating to me, because perhaps unfairly I think of Australia as quite a knockabout place. I think of Australians as being a little less enlightened, perhaps, I guess I'm setting too much store by Crocodile Dundee. But that's what I want to know. What is it about British culture that makes this sort of behaviour normal, an accepted norm, specifically about British culture? Because we have so much in common with our Australian cousins that this one really sticks out like a sore thumb. What is it about British culture that has created generations of men who think that a woman jogging in public is fair game or an acceptable target for language and behaviour that they would never inflict upon a woman that they actually know or a woman that they're related to? 0345 6060973. I want to dig into the reasons for it as opposed to the reality of it. So we did the reality of it yesterday. Today, the reasons for it. And it would seem from this article that it is not unique, but peculiar to Britain, that Britain has a particularly difficult relationship with men harassing female joggers and female runners. Why? Because if Australia, if it never ever happens in Australia, that means we can easily create a culture in which it would never ever happen here. Or if not easily, then it is achievable. I think I felt yesterday that it was a bit like trying to climb Mount Everest or turn an oil tanker around. I got a few messages saying the only way you're ever going to do this is by asking men what they can do to stop men from behaving like this. And I think that's probably true, but I thought it was an unachievable goal. I thought it was an unattainable ideal, the idea that you could actually wipe out this sort of behaviour entirely, which is why this morning when I read this article in the Times about Australia, not about a country that we don't know much about or a country that we don't have much connection with. And Australia gets more or less the same telly that we get as well, which I think is also pertinent because you can't blame it all on Benny Hill. Australia, it never ever happens. And here, it happens all the flipping time. 80 or 90% of women reporting that it happens to them, not just occasionally, but routinely. And I want you to tell me why you think that is. Why would Britain be a particularly unpleasant hotbed of men harassing women when they are out jogging or exercising with this extraordinary condition that in Australia it never happens at all? Okay? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. 0345 6060973. I suppose in some ways the most pertinent contribution will be from people who've got a foot in both cultures. But I don't think you need to be. You could have a foot only in one culture. You could explain to me why Australian men do not do this. In fact, let's make that question too. Why do Australian men not harass women in public when they're out jogging? 0345 6060 973. Why do British men do it more than almost anybody else in the world? 0345 6060 973. And how can one, i.e. us, learn from the other, i.e. the Aussies, in order to create a country in which women can go about their exercise unmolested, unharassed and uninsulted? And listen, I'm not having it. You can't. My inbox is pinging with Benny Hills and Carry On films, but they will be as familiar to an Australian television viewer as they are to a British television viewer. What is it about this country, about the United Kingdom, that makes this behaviour, that has allowed this sort of behaviour to become the norm? I find it absolutely fascinating. And it becomes even more fascinating. I mean, it moves into a whole new dimension of interesting when you discover that it never, ever happens in Australia. I'm equally interested, actually, in these two questions. Why does it never happen in Australia? 03456060973. And why does it happen so much here? It feels like yesterday, I don't know, I finished that hour thinking I got something a bit wrong there. It was fascinating, and I'm incredibly grateful to everybody who contributed. But I didn't come away, here it is. So during our time together, the hours I come away from feeling most nourished are the ones where I think I know something that I didn't know before. Think of Thomas's call at the top of the last hour with regards to Eastern European attitudes to Russian imperial aggression, or how Polish people will feel about the events unfolding in Alaska this weekend compared to someone brought up, for example, in Kidderminster. So I come away from an hour understanding something a little bit better, or on a good day a lot better than I did before, and I didn't feel that happened yesterday, and that's my fault. But this is why this story today landed so heavily with me, because it moves us directly into the sort of space where we can actually come away having a better understanding of something than we had before. So here it is. Why does British culture seem to have allowed behaviour like this to become the accepted norm? And why does Australian culture deliver precisely the opposite experience, precisely the opposite reality? And that is, forgive me again for maligning in my mind, in my subconscious, for maligning Australians. That is not the way round I would necessarily have expected it to be. 0345 6060 973.
This is LBC.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
But 9.13% fixed annual return with Cufflink. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Hard not to agree. Visit cufflink.com. That's Cufflink. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to auto-invest and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA. Visit cufflink.com for full T's and C's.
Train to Peckham. Kids in tow. Rooftop cinema time.
6 packs of popcorn. I think one will do, Nina.
Ah, clear skies, comfy seats, a talking panda. Clearly what we all needed. Okay, everyone's seated now, probably doing panda impressions. I wonder when Nan can watch the kids so I can come back with James. Oh, just the two of us.
Download the Southern Railway app to book advanced tickets from only £8 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply, see our website for full details.
Arenas full of fans. Stars taking it to another level. The excitement, the glory, the action. And you could be behind it all. Kickstart your career in esports with Global Academy's new esports production sixth form course. Get the skills and knowledge to join a fast-growing media industry. And you can even join Global Academy's own esports team. Thinking what next after GCSEs? Then find out more about the esports production sixth form course at globalacademy.com.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 16 minutes after 11. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. We may have opened up a bit of a blind alley here. I did say the plural of anecdote is not data, and it may well be that the rosy picture of Australia being painted by this journalist in the Times today is one that not everybody recognises. But the question of why British men are particularly prone to harassing women on the street, particularly women who are out exercising, is one that truly intrigues me. What is it that we've done? What is it about our culture that creates this notion that it is normal, that it is acceptable behaviour, that the sons learn it from fathers, the brothers learn it from brothers, the colleagues learn it from colleagues? Why would British culture have a particular problem with the sort of harassment that the undercover police officers in Surrey were encountering on an endemic scale when they took it upon themselves to try to nip this sort of behaviour in the bud? 17 minutes after 11 is the time. The number you need is 03456060973. I mean, not had a single catcall in 8 years, said Sophia, who moved to Australia from West Drayton in West London, where she would carry a rape alarm on runs after once being followed home by two men in a car. It's so nice not to live with that constant fear of harassment here. I can wear what I like and not worry, said Amy, who moved to Sydney from Putney, southwest London, in 2023. I this isn't necessarily the experience that's being recognised by people getting in touch with me who've spent time in Australia. So it may be that the second element of the phone-in, why does it not happen in Australia, is not going to be very fruitful. But the first half of the phone-in, why do British men do it so much? That, I think, does merit further inquiry. So if you think you can answer that question, why do British men engage in this sort of behaviour so much at a time when we like to think that we've made progress or improved relations in other ways? This way seems to, if anything, have got worse, not better. Why do we think that is? 18 minutes after 11 is the time. John's in Chesterfield to kick things off. John, what would you like to say?
Hi, nice to speak to you.
Likewise.
We are of a similar age, and I've observed all my life British men, being one myself, perhaps vaguely atypical. I think we see this in our politics as well, but I think a combination of failed empire plus a contempt for education means that a significant portion of our male population celebrates ignorance and celebrates just being moronic for the sake of it. We're not moronic, I'm sure, but I think some people like it.
Performative oafishness.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And why would that be peculiar to Britain? I mean, I think that my initial reaction to this story may have been correct, and that the Aussie experience is not necessarily the one reported in the Times, because I would have perhaps unfairly thought that Australian men were just as likely to engage in this sort of behaviour as British men. But working on the principle that there might be something peculiar to Britain, what would that be?
That's very difficult for me to answer. I've never been to Australia.
No, but
and I
peculiar
don't know.
To Britain. Why would we? Why, I mean, you and I would never do it, and yet we live in a country where many, many men would. What different influences? What would explain that? You go to Spain, apparently, and it hardly ever happens at all. I mean, again, there's going to be people telling me, "Oh, I was in Spain last week, and someone hooted their horn at me." But I guess that's where we're coming to, isn't it? Is it all men, or do we have a particular problem with it? It feels like we do.
Well, we do. I don't think it's all men. And you said correctly, you and I wouldn't do it. But perhaps, are you and I typical? And we both appear to be people who do our best to think. Of course, we make mistakes and get things wrong. But, you know, some people choose not to think because it's easier.
And it's fun.
Sorry, I missed what you said.
Or it's fun. By the sort of performative nature of the... of the oafishness. Thank you. I suppose, you know, a couple of people pointing out, if you've got the President of the United States of America boasting about actually grabbing women by their genitalia and then being defended up to the highest levels of public discourse in this country, then it's a bit snobbish, perhaps, to focus on white van men or people driving through town shouting stuff at joggers or at women who are exercising. I don't know is the short answer to that. 21 minutes after 11 is the time. I will accept, I think, now. I didn't want to knock the stuffing out of the whole story with the first calls. I will accept challenges from Australians to the idea that this doesn't happen in Australia. But I warn you in advance, I am still going to be inquiring into the question of why some men do it and other men don't. What is it about our culture that has created a sense that it is sort of acceptable behaviour? James is in Hatfield. James, what would you like to say?
Oh, I just... morning, by the way, James. Nice to meet you. I'd like to say that, yeah, as a veteran, I've noticed, since I've been out, I've noticed a lot of people have lost respect in the British culture. And that's on both sides, male and female. You know, we just don't respect each other.
I don't think this is new behaviour. I think this behaviour is as old. I don't know when you joined the army, but I suspect this sort of stuff was going on in the 1960s and 70s.
Yeah, grant you. Yeah, it probably has. And I just think it's become the normality of it. But the respect on both sides has just gone. I mean, even in the 60s and the 90s, we still had that respect for women, for them to do, have the vote and speak up, equal rights.
I mean, it's a nice picture that you paint, but it's not one that many women would recognise, the idea that their cause has been set back in recent years, as opposed to advanced by the forces of feminism. So I don't know that that necessarily lands in the question of why do British blokes engage in this sort of behaviour more than blokes in other countries, 23 after 11, although that is about as close to shaky a premise as any that I've ever explored on the show, judging from my inbox, and I suspect from what Annette in Milton Keynes is about to tell us.
Hello there.
Hello, Annette.
Hi there. I'm the one who's had a different experience in Australia.
Between you and me, Annette, I don't think you're the only one.
No, Brisbane was rife with men yelling at me out the car windows. Even walking down the street, I'd be yelled at, let alone jogging. I think the difference is this, and I think this is what people... why maybe it's different. In Brisbane, I saw very few joggers.
Right.
Due to the heat, people are in gyms mostly.
Okay.
So most of the people that I knew who were exercising in gyms.
Oh.
If they were getting up to go jogging, they'd have to be getting up very early or very late at night.
Yeah.
Because it was just too hot.
I like this. This is the meteorological analysis of the phenomenon that we're discussing.
Yep. So, also the terrain as well. Where I am in Milton Keynes, we've got lots of lovely
roundabouts
and roundabouts and everything. So people aren't having to jog on the main road, and so there's lots of parks and things. But where I was in Brisbane, apart from the main roads, there wasn't anywhere to jog. So it was just...
So you're getting into the habit. I'm thinking of a man getting into the habit of doing it. And if we think of the jogging woman as prey, then you don't get into the habit of being a predator unless there's quite a lot of prey around. And because it doesn't happen very often, the relatively small number of women who do go jogging are not going to be harassed because it hasn't become a sort of baked-in behaviour for the blokes that do it here.
I don't know, but if I was going to run a proper study on this...
Yes, I think we should.
I'd be looking at, who actually is going while jogging, what time they're doing it, because I saw very few joggers, and people just didn't jog due to the heat, so... I think it's a little bit different.
And to the Times journalist who claims that having moved from London to Australia, she's never experienced it at all, is she very, very lucky, or would you want to get the lie detector test out?
No. I just want to see where she's going jogging and at what time she's doing
it.
And why isn't she in the gym like everyone else?
I hadn't thought of that. I would think of Australians as being exercising all the time. But, yeah, you're right. If you're really, really hot, you're not going to be doing it outdoors. Thank you, Annette. 11:25 is the time. Mystery Hour, of course, on the way at 12. Did I give you the good news? Exciting news about Mystery Hour last week. Did I share it with you? I can't remember if I did or not. I'm going to pretend that I didn't, and I'm going to do it again. I can't remember the last time this happened. I take an article out of the newspaper in very good faith and think, God, that's interesting. And then everybody who knows more about it than I do is rather persuaded that it isn't actually true at all. It's an interesting challenge that we face, but it doesn't, of course, change the question about entitlement. If you needed to understand why do men do that, what would you say? You say, why do men do that? So you've got two men sitting in two vehicles, or two groups of men sitting in two vehicles, and a woman jogs past. And one group of men decide to shout something at her. And another group of men would not do that in a million years. And let's not be po-faced about it. They might make comments to each other, which they wouldn't repeat in front of their mothers or their girlfriends. But there's no earthly way they're going to wind the window down and shout something at her. They just would never do it. And yet here's a group of men that would. And I don't think it's class-based, actually. I know White Van Man gets a lot of jip in this precise context. It's often pointed out that it is usually coming from a white van. That's just because that's the vehicle in which a group of men are most likely to have congregated. I think if you had groups of men from other backgrounds driving around together routinely, then it would be just as likely to occur. Why? What is the difference between those two groups of men? I thought it was going to be a question about the difference between the British men and the Australian men. I don't know that it is. We're probably about to hear another reason why we shouldn't take that on trust in a second. But let's just do the two groups of men, the men that do it and the men who don't. What's the difference between them? 0345 6060 973. Mignon is in Provence. Mignon, what would you like to say?
Oh, hello, James.
Hello.
I'm Australian, but I live in Kent.
Okay.
I'm on holiday at the moment.
Fantastic.
We're listening to you as we're driving to Saint-Tropez.
Very nice.
I think, thanks. Well, as an Australian, I was born and raised there. I've lived in England for 20 years. I can tell you, I've been listening to you and I've been chuckling a little bit. You're way overthinking this, mate. You're way overthinking this.
It's not my fault. I'm reading a story in the Times in good faith.
Yeah, you're way overthinking it. It's not anything to do with class or, you know, men are men. Wherever you go, 50% of the world, they're all the same.
But they're not, though, are they? Because some men would never behave like this in a million years.
Well, I've just spoken to my mum, just to double-check. You get fined in Australia if you can get fined. You can get in trouble. You can be charged with sexual harassment if you call out the window to a woman. Now, it never used to be like that. When I grew up in Australia in my 20s, if I had a dollar, an Australian dollar, for every time I was catcalled, pinched,
I'm going to withdraw my apology to all Australians in that case because you don't want to apologise too much. So I presumed that would be the case from my passing knowledge of Australia.
No. I lived there right up.
No, like, I believe
even
you.
I was in a nightclub and I walked past a table of men and one of them slapped my bum so hard.
I think that's outrageous.
It left a bruise.
Yeah. Oh, that didn't, and that's not men being men.
I had a handprint on my butt.
Well, it's your butt, so you can laugh about it. But I don't know whether it's old age,
James,
or becoming a father. I don't find that funny.
I don't find it funny either. Okay. And I have a daughter.
Yes.
I didn't find it funny at the time. In fact, and my boyfriend, who I was with, just pretended he didn't see it. And then when we got outside of the club, he's, oh, that's terrible that they did that. It's like, well, go back in and say something. Oh, no.
I don't want to do that. Is there any difference? So, I mean, for you, I think there's no difference at all between Australian men and British men. And if the law has changed since you were younger, then that might explain the experiences of the women quoted in the Times today.
There are far more laws now. The police can be called. They can receive a fine. If they do that in the workplace, God help them.
Good.
It's great. And it's the same in France. You're not allowed to call out in France, and harass people. It happens though. I mean, I don't want to tell you my age, but every time I go to France, I have men call out their cars and things like that. But in Australia, it was, in my youth. Oh, my God.
So it's fixable, but it's not quite the...
It is fixable. It's fixable.
I've got to go to the news minion. Can I just clarify something for you? Can you clarify something for me? You're on holiday with your husband.
Yeah.
And listening to the show.
Yeah.
And so engaged were you with the content that you heard that you phoned your mother in Australia to do some research before phoning me.
Absolutely.
That's
I used
fantastic.
To work in radio.
Well, that's why. Then you know how important it is. I should probably have done a bit more research on this story and then I wouldn't have concluded.
Oh, yeah.
Well, thank goodness you were here to help, Mignon. It's 11:31. Thomas Watts, how's your headlines?
The Kremlin says Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin will discuss ending what it called the Ukraine crisis tomorrow. The Ukrainian leader, Volodymyr Zelensky, has been at Downing Street this morning ahead of the Alaska summit. A man accused of driving into crowds at Liverpool's Premier League victory parade is facing an additional 24 charges. 53-year-old Paul Doyle, who was originally charged with 7 offences, has appeared in court. There's been another rise in the proportion of A-level entries awarded the top grades. Hundreds of thousands of school leavers are picking up their marks today. More than 28% of them A or A star. LBC weather, dry for many with warm sunshine, some thundery showers in the north. A high of 28 degrees.
This is LBC.
Ugh, drizzly drive to the office. Ever wanted to just shove some bits in a bag? Hop on a plane and land somewhere magnifique? Well, with Kayak Explore, it's easier than ever. Whatever your budget, wherever you want to go, simply set the amount you want to spend and Kayak finds flights that fit. Easy breezy. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
I'm Taz. I've been part of the dental hygiene therapy team here at Darwood and Tanner for nearly 20 years. At Darwood & Tanner, we know the importance of ongoing maintenance and long-term care. This is a crucial part of our dental implant treatments, so you can be sure we're here to keep you smiling for many years to come.
A team of dental experts second to none.
armed with the very latest in dental implant knowledge, technology, and techniques. Visit darwoodandtanner.co.uk.
The people have spoken. Drivers have voted. And the Auto Express Driver Power Family Car of the Year is, wait for it, the Vauxhall Astra. Chosen for its design, drive and onboard tech. Get behind the wheel and experience the award-winning Vauxhall Astra Griffin Hatch or Sports Tourer today. Two models, one offer. Both £325 a month with £325 initial rental. Search Astra Griffin now. Personal contract hire and Astra Griffin 1.2 manual hatchback or Sports Tourer. 48 months, T's and C's, subject to status and availability. You will not own the car. Stellantis Financial Services.
Outlet shopping at the O2. Get up to 70% off RRP on over 60 designer brands, including Nike, Adidas, Levi's, Sunglass Hut, the cosmetics company store, Le Creuset, and more. Plus, why not make a day of it with over 30 bars and restaurants, a cinema, bowling, interactive football, and more. There's so much to do at the O2 this summer. Find us at North Greenwich, just 15 minutes from central London. Search Outlet Shopping at the O2 to start planning your visit.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
11:34. Okay then, where doesn't it happen? Where do you never get catcalled as a woman when you're out jogging? And then what can we learn from that when we compare it to the countries where you do? There's some heated debate about what the score is in Australia. British expats reporting in the Times today that they never experienced the kind of harassment that is absolutely commonplace here. Some people with experience of Australia are disputing that claim. But is, I mean, where does it never happen in Western countries? And obviously it's unlikely to happen in countries where women would never go out in sports bras and shorts. So I don't know how helpful that would be, although there may be some lessons there for humanity. Where does it never happen? And what can we learn from that? 25 to 12 is the time. But the crucial question, really, which we should have asked yesterday, is why does it happen here? What is it? What is the difference between the blokes that do it and the blokes that don't? 0345 60 60 973. I've also got double bubble today on misinformation. Two stories that you have heard a lot about, but you won't be hearing the latest developments because they're actually true, it would seem. And the claims that were made when you were hearing a lot about these stories were probably not true. If I tell you that they are both related to taxation, what would you go for first? So we already know that there are now more private schools in this country than there were before the Labour government introduced VAT on school fees. So the claim that that was going to create a catalogue of closures has been completely debunked. We did a misinformation on that last week, actually. What are the other two biggies? If you were looking at taxes, what are the two biggies that have been claimed by the usual suspects in recent weeks? What was a tax introduced by the Labour government that was disgusting and unfair and wrong, and it was going to lead to the closure of, or the departure of, or the disappearance of, or the erosion of? What the two big stories? Once you remove the private education one from the mixture, what are the two big stories that right-wing media have been making enormous noise about? If you can get that right, then you'll know what the double bubble is in today's misinformation. And the other question that we will continue to address is the one about so-called catcalling. No one really thinks it was a waste of police time. That's what I mean by progress. It's why the lad claiming that things have got worse as opposed to better, I think, was barking up the wrong tree. If I'd had this phone in 25 years ago, well, I wouldn't have been here. So if I'd had this phone in 20 years ago, there would have been people saying, oh, it's a complete waste of police time. It's absolutely absurd. And you'd have had some women ringing in to say, oh, it doesn't, there's no harm. I like it. It's a compliment. But you recognise that that is conditioning. That's gaslighting. That's social conditioning. And it is not good. It is not acceptable. So why does it still go on? And what is the difference between, or what are the differences between the men who do it and the men who don't? And crucially, in the countries where it happens a lot and the countries where it doesn't. Kevin is in Worcester. That's two. You wait ages for a call from Worcester and you get two in one day. Kevin, what would you like to say?
Morning, James.
Hello, Kevin.
I think, just an opinion, but I believe our society, because of the history, and it's so much older than Australia, we've grown up with this for hundreds of years. And it's inbred in us now. And when you think about Australia being a younger country, I don't believe we give Australians enough credit for how progressive a society they are. They are much better adapting and changing than we certainly are.
What do you base that
and
on?
I don't think... I was out there for a little while working in 2010, okay. And they genuinely seem to take things on board that much quicker than we do. Perhaps because there's less people, I don't know. But certainly because they want to change. I just don't think our society in the UK is very good at change, quite frankly. And we don't teach our young lads enough about how respect is important.
You might be right. And as you say, that would be a constant. Things are better than they were in some areas, but yesterday when we were talking to women in particular about their experiences, there was a sense that in some areas things had actually got worse in recent years. It's why Andrew Tate's name popped up a lot, and the online misogyny and the appalling influences that young boys are being exposed to, all of which could have happened in Australia as well, and yet... I like your analysis. We've had a meteorological analysis and now we've got a generational analysis. It's because it's a younger country. They're more nimble when it comes to social change.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I think they have the ability and want to do that more than we do. I think I'm in my 60s now. But I still see even younger guys in their 40s and so on aren't teaching the right behaviours to younger people. I just don't think it happens enough. And we still take on. You've got to face it, James. We have still a lad's culture within this country, and it isn't changing. If anything, it's probably getting more so.
Yeah, and there's lots of elements of laddishness that I rather like. Most obviously, football, I suppose. But the public and deliberate persecution of another human being is of a different order altogether. But you're right. You think about it in generational terms. It's been around forever. Thank you for that. 20 to 12 is the time. 03456060973 is the number that you need. A double bubble of a missed information on the horizon. Mystery are coming up at 12. So lots of reasons to be happy today. Michael is in Eastbourne. Michael, what would you like to say?
Oh, hello, James. I wanted to disagree with you, actually. You were saying we should take Benny Hill and the Carry-Ons out of the whole equation. But I'm afraid we can't. I mean, I'm a similar age to you.
No, but only because they're on the telly in Australia all the time as well.
Yeah, well, I can't speak for Australia.
I am now speaking for Australia.
Oh, okay.
They have British TV on all the time, and their repeats are as constant as ours are.
Oh, okay, yeah. But I'm speaking as a gay man, you know.
Aren't you speaking for all gay men?
All gay men.
Yeah, yeah. I will speak for Australia, and you speak for the gay men, all the gay men, okay?
All the gay men.
Yeah, we're going to close this down by tea time. Carry on. In the world, all the gay men in the world, Michael.
The thing is that we've got this infantilism... still in our culture. We've not just the Carry-Ons and Benny Hill, but all the Lady Chatterley and all the tittering, you know, and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And when you're not part of it, it's fascinating to watch it. Not the harassment, that side of
No,
it.
No, I understand what you mean. The seaside postcard approach to sex, almost.
Yes, but that's where it starts, you know, and... Yeah. It's not until, I mean, I don't like to say it, but it's not until, I mean, I can't speak for the younger generation of homosexuals.
Yeah, you can. You're speaking for all of them.
All of them, yes, yes. But it's not until this ridiculous attitude to sex just goes away, you know. I mean, it's...
What, with age?
Well, no, I mean, when we get rid of that I don't know how we get rid of it from our culture, but it's
objectification. It's a fancy word, objectification, to describe something like Benny Hill or the Carry-On films. But it is reducing women to their parts, and that is I think that's what you're describing. That kind of whole sniggering seaside postcard, big boobs, all that sort of thing, and that is the world that these men are temporarily inhabiting, because I'm sure they don't treat their wives and mothers like that. Or maybe some of them do.
That's what I was going to say. Yes. Actually, yes. I mean, you know, as I say, I don't know about Australia, but speaking like, you know, talking about
countries like Italy and Spain, they've got that whole matriarchal structure to their society. And, you know, I know the I'm not speaking for all Italians and all Spaniards.
I think they're pretty bad at this
thing. Oh, really?
Yeah, I think the Spaniards have got better since the law changed. But I don't know that you would be able to jog around Italy in a sports bra and shorts. Not you, obviously, that would be ridiculous. But the average woman would be able to do that without attracting attention that she didn't really want or welcome. But I mean, it could be true everywhere, couldn't it? We have this peculiar relationship with sex. But
it's the infantilism.
Yeah, I like that word. Top page three could be part of it, couldn't it? Page three was an exercise in objectification.
The Murdochification. You put it, that's it.
There you go.
Murdoch.
If it's not Trump, it's Murdoch. And I just,
it's Murdoch.
Yeah, well, it could be. That I mean, the notion of objectification is there. Very much so. Thank you, Michael. Shall I do the double bubble on misinformation now, or shall I do it in the next? I'll do it in the next segment. It's an absolute cracker. And quite a few of you guessed correctly. I'll give you another chance. Two stories about tax. It's not the VAT on school fees that the right-wing media has been having kittens about for months and filling your head with all sorts of fear and clamming. I mean, you know what the rhetoric here is. It's like if someone's poor and they have to use a food bank, it's because they're lazy and lying and spending all their money on cigarettes and flat-screen televisions. But if somebody is claiming that they won't be able to send their child to private school anymore when VAT is put on school fees, then it is a catastrophe of incalculable proportions, and these people need our support and our help and everything else under the sun. That kind of rhetoric. It extends into two other areas. Oh, you can't do this because they'll do that. Or you can't do this because that. What are the two biggies? Once you set aside VAT on school fees, what have you got? From the last few months of right-wing media in this country, the two sections of society that desperately need to be protected from the tax policies of the Labour government. And that will be the source of, or the double source, the twin source of today's misinformation, or should that be misinformations after this?
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
The Chancellor is trying to find new ways of clawing more money out of your pocket, this time as you enter the ground. The inheritance tax changes would see more people fall into having to pay inheritance tax. It sees people as a number at the bottom of a spreadsheet rather than the hard work, energy and effort that has gone up into building you into a position where you have got a fair chunk of money in your pension pot, or you have got a house that through no work of your own has suddenly risen from 175 grand to 1.2 million.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
Hurry, the Hillary summer sale ends soon. Don't miss out on up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, you can still get £50 off your electric blind order, an easy way to control your blinds. But be quick, these offers end 26th of August. And if you find the same product with the same service for less, we'll match the price. Book your free in-home appointment today. Visit hillarys.co.uk. The Hillary summer sale ends soon. Don't miss it. Conditions apply.
Who's a good human? Alex is. Because today's dog walk with Lulu the Corgi has turned into an off-grid adventure. But wherever Lulu's nose takes her, Alex will always gladly follow. That's why he also chooses Butternut Box for Lulu's meals. Freshly prepared and served straight from the fridge. Helping Lulu thrive from nose to tail. Meaning one less trek for Alex as we deliver each box straight to your door. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
It's official. We're the Lidl Stomp Price, which have crowned us the cheapest supermarket this July, beating seven other supermarkets, including their loyalty prices. For the Lidlest prices, you know you can always rely on us. Now that's big on quality and always Lidl on price.
Findings based on independent price comparison of 76 items by which every day in July 2025.
Train to Pevensey Bay. Beach, mates, cooler. Oh,
Danny, you got the hummus, yeah?
Of course.
Now this is what it's all about. Time to relax.
Huh? Frisbee? No, you two crack on.
Just made the train. Now home to over half the beach from my bag. 10 out of 10 day, though.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel and off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
All those glasses are a great choice. And now you can pick a free pair from our Boots range.
Free?
That's right.
What, free?
Absolutely. There's hundreds to choose from, too.
For free? Does the manager know?
I am the manager.
Oh, in that case, how do these look?
With buy one, get one free at Boots Opticians, everyone can save in style. Book an eye test today and see what's possible. Free Boots pair when you spend £150 on prescription glasses or sunglasses. Offer ends 23rd of September 2025. T's and C's apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It's 11:48. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. This is relevant to the conversation we were having yesterday. It's a story that's broken while we've been on air this morning. The family of B.B. King, one of the three girls killed in the Southport attack last year, have urged ministers to reconsider their support for disclosing the ethnicity of serious crime suspects, saying that this information is, quotes, completely irrelevant, end quotes, and that the, again I'm quoting, the propensity to commit crime happens in any ethnicity, nationality or race, end quotes. What a powerful and in the current context, quite courageous intervention. And we failed yesterday to come up with any reason why you would do this, except in the hope of appeasing and running the risk, of course, of provoking racism and racists. But there it is, from the family of one of the three girls killed in Southport. I'm going to make a grim prediction now that this will be completely ignored by people who want to use that crime to pursue whatever agenda it is that they want to pursue. I'm reminded of at least two other cases. I'm reminded of Fusilier Lee Rigby and his family's frequent pleas that people stop using him and his death, his murder, as ammunition in a war against immigration. And Alice Gross, who was murdered very near where I live now in West London, and whose family were I would use the word desperate. I think I spoke to her sister around the time for her murder by a Bulgarian man, not to be turned into a conversation about the European Union or about Brexit or about immigration. And they were all completely ignored. And I fear, I hope I'm wrong, but I fear that the family of B.B. King will also be completely ignored when they warn that the government is, and I quote the grandfather of the little girl, kowtowing to the likes of Farage. And there it is. It doesn't make it more accurate because it comes from people so closely associated with that particular crime, but it makes it more poignant, and I think we, at the very, very least, should pay rather more attention to the comments of that family than we should to some of the sort of self-appointed spokespeople in a similar space. 10 to 12 is the time. We are discussing a slightly controversial story about Australian men never catcalling women, while British men do it all the time. A version of events that has not been completely recognised, it must be said, by people, women, who have spent a lot of time in Australia, perhaps even exercising or jogging around the place. But the question of why some men do it and some men don't remains pertinent, and to me at least, fascinating. Andy's in Morden. Andy, what would you like to say?
Yes, hello, good morning, James.
Hello, Andy.
So, I drive around in a white van.
Oh, yes.
And it's very, very recognisable. However...
Is it? There's loads of them around.
Yeah, but I've got my company name on the
You've
side.
You've got a logo.
I have a logo on the side of my van, right. And my friends and my acquaintances, they know full well it's me who's driven past.
Yes.
However, when I got my new van, my newer van, it took a bit of time for it to get written up. So I was in a very indistinct white van.
Yes.
And as is my wont, I did a cheery toot to a friend of ours as I drove past. And she just cast her eyes downwards because she didn't recognise me. And it hit me like a thunderclap to think, oh my God, she thinks I'm one of these idiots that does this.
Wow.
And so I stopped doing it. I drive past people that I know. Quick toot, say wave out the window, hello.
Sure, of course, but not the kind of unfocused toot, which is designed, or rather the toot from someone you don't know to someone they don't
absolutely
know, which is quite aggressive, or certainly potentially intimidating.
Yeah, indeed, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. And I only started saying hello to people again as I drove along once I got the van written up.
Because they can look up and they can see that it's you. And in fact, if you were doing it and it wasn't welcome, the fact that you've got the company logo on the side means that they could ring you up and have a go or report you to your boss if you were driving a company vehicle that wasn't your company, couldn't you?
I am the boss.
No, I know you are. I know. So I'm going to file that straight to the top. My head of personnel will be getting back to you before the week is out. It's common, though, isn't it? I mean, that's the point. You must catch other people in other vans doing it quite regularly.
Oh, yeah. I used to have a driver that would do big deliveries for me at one time, and he was cringingly embarrassing. I mean, he was an older man. He was in his 60s.
Right.
And he would chiyite women out of the window and blow the horn and you know, make very, very nasty comments about them. And it would be uncomfortable sitting by him because you didn't want to be associated with him. And I'm just glad that he retired.
That's probably the answer to my other question about what men can do to stop men doing it. And the answer is not like get cross, all right, but just sort of look at them as if there's something wrong with them. What are you doing? Seriously, mate, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? What if it was you? I mean, why? That might be the answer, but I don't know. It's like everything else, isn't it? Bystander syndrome. 11:54 is the time. Okay, let's do this. This is a really, really good one, and I'm very gratified. You can go straight to the top of the class today by the number of people who have correctly identified the two areas in which the right-wing media have spent months encouraging you to get very angry and worried, but about which they will be completely silent today.
Missed information.
Thank you, Emily. The first is the exodus of non-doms from the UK. You remember this? They're all leaving. They're all leaving. They're all going. Yes, that's what happened. Oh, they're all going. Oh, dear. They're all, you've got to look after the billionaire. If you, oh, yes, they've all got, you, but no, they, fears of, the Financial Times reports this morning, fears of a massive non-dom exodus from the UK have been allayed by initial tax data. Down with data, hey? Who needs data when you've got a headline to be written, or when you've got some quotes, research, end quotes, undertaken by some very, very, shall we say, self-interested parties. With total numbers leaving, let me get this right. Fears of a massive non-dom exodus from the UK have been allayed by initial tax data, which suggests that total numbers leaving the country are in line with or even below official forecasts. HM Revenue and Customs payroll data has found no evidence to suggest that more non-doms left Britain in response to Rachel Reeves's 2024 budget than official predictions, according to people briefed on the findings. So that's your first.
Missed information.
There is not an exodus of non-doms, and all of the people that told you that there was will no doubt be correcting the record imminently. And I've actually got time for another one.
Missed information.
Does it have to rewind, Keith? Is that why we... Do you have to rewind it before you can press play again? Or did I not... Most UK agricultural estates can shoulder the cost of higher death duties without being forced to sell the family farm. This is a study into UK inheritance tax reform showing that family farms will be largely protected by the new measures. This is an analysis by an independent organisation into the inheritance tax regime set out in the autumn budget, after which it was claimed that loads of farms would not be able to pay their inheritance tax bills. 8 out of 10 farm estates affected by changes to the tax regime will be able to pay their entire bill using non-farm assets. And this comes from the Centre for the Analysis of Taxation. It means 2 in 10 may have to sell something that is part of the farming outfit in order to meet their bills. But the idea that this was a existential threat is clearly ridiculous. Our analysis shows that the government's reform largely protects family farms whilst limiting claims by the wealthiest estates, said Andy Summers, Director of Centax and Associate Professor at the London School of Economics. There are going to be some farms, some farming estates, maybe about 70 out of 1,560 who are going to have to find the money from within the farming assets. But my goodness me, that's rather at odds with how this story was presented to you by the right-wing media. So there's no non-dom exodus, and there's no imminent threat to the massive majority of family farms required to pay inheritance tax, still at a lower rate than every other business in the country. And there are now more private schools in this country than there were before the Labour government introduced VAT on school fees. Well, riddle me that. And I didn't necessarily expect all three of those chickens to come home to roost, but I would expect all the people who've spent months writing columns and waxing lyrical about how awful all three of these policies were to say absolutely nothing about it to you in the near future. I think I may have misdescribed the killer of the Hanwell schoolgirl Alice Gross as Bulgarian, who he was in fact Latvian. That's still technically a suspect because he was found dead as well. But the family of Alice were adamant that they didn't want that tragedy, that story, being in any way appropriated by anti-immigration activists. It's coming up to Mystery Hour. Shall we squeeze in one more on the Australian question? Rihanna is in Chiswick, where nobody ever gets catcalled. Rihanna, what would you like to say?
Oh, that made me laugh, but I certainly do. I would say, so I lived in Australia for 5 years, and it's certainly not my experience that it doesn't happen there. I would say it actually happened to me more when I lived out there.
This is just outrageous. You can't trust the Times newspaper. Who can you trust, Rihanna? It's just an absolute shocker.
Exactly right. I mean, yeah, I live in London now, and it obviously still happens here, and it happened a lot more when I moved back in 2017, but I'm not experiencing it as much now. I'm quite an avid runner. I run most days, and in Australia, I couldn't go out running without this happening to me, which was quite shocking.
Mignon's mum told us the law had changed. Maybe it's changed since you were there?
I go back quite regularly. I would say I go back once a year, maybe once every 2 years. I'm still experiencing it. It's not fun.
Well, it's a good job I didn't try and build a whole hour of phone-in radio on the premise of this article in the Times claiming the exact opposite of what you've experienced, isn't it? That would have been really embarrassing.
Yeah.
Especially when I spend a lot of time castigating other people for not doing their fact-checking in advance. Rihanna, thank you. I'm sorry to hear that it happens in Chiswick. Only since I left, I suspect, has that behaviour seeped back into popularity. It's 12 noon, it's Thursday. Your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. What is the mystery that you need solving? What is the riddle you need unravelling? What is the enigma that you need... what's another word for unravelling or solving, Pete? Fixing? Yes. Illuminating? Anyway, people ring in with questions, right? And then you ring in with answers, or someone else rings in with an answer. The rest of us, we just sit back and enjoy it, secure in the knowledge that we're going to learn a lot and laugh a lot. What's not to like?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, the Kremlin says ending what it's called the Ukrainian crisis will be at the centre of the US-Russia summit. Officials say Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin will also discuss economic cooperation when they meet in Alaska tomorrow. Sir Keir Starmer hosted Ukraine's Volodymyr Zelensky for talks in Downing Street this morning. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark has more.
The whole point of the Coalition of the Willing, Sir Keir Starmer's show of support of President Zelensky this morning, is because Zelensky isn't invited to these talks tomorrow. And this is all about trying to show President Trump the words of President Zelensky and have his message fresh in his mind when he does so. Ukraine, of course, wants security guarantees for any sort of peace deal. And there are fears, of course, that basically Putin and Trump are going to decide the future of Ukraine tomorrow without Ukraine.
A 53-year-old man accused of driving into crowds at Liverpool's Premier League victory parade is facing 24 new charges. More than 100 people were hurt when a car drove into fans during the Premier League title celebrations. LBC's Chris Chambers is at Liverpool Crown Court.
Paul Doyle appeared via video link and was in tears, wiping his eyes on the sleeve of his T-shirt and struggling to confirm his name. The 53-year-old was already facing 7 charges relating to 6 victims. In court today, though, he was told he'll face another 24, one for affray and the other 23 for assault. We also learnt today that 6 of the charges relate to children, with 2 being 6 months old and 7 months old. Chris Chambers, LBC, at Liverpool Crown Court.
A record number of 18-year-olds have secured a place at their first choice of university. They've been picking up their A-level, T-level and BTEC marks this morning.
An A star in maths and further maths, and an A in physics and computer science.
I got a distinction star and then two A stars, and I got my A in my AP kit.
It's gone pretty well. I got my first choice. I'm quite happy.
Boys have outperformed girls at A-level for the first time in 7 years. The regional gap between London and the North East is at its widest level under the current grading system. Around 150 people have had to leave a hospital in London following reports of a chemical incident. Firefighters say they are now ventilating parts of the basement and ground floor at Guy's Hospital. And ministers have insisted the latest GDP figures are a positive sign for the economy. Growth slowed to 0.3% between April and June. That was better than expected, but down from the 0.7% in the first quarter. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was down 7 at 91.57. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 16. LBC weather, most places dry with some spells of very warm sunshine, a few thundery showers further north, a high of 28 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Have I won a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6.
T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
4 minutes after 12 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Mystery Hour is upon us. Hurrah and huzzah. I'm not demob happy because I'm happy to be joining you again tomorrow, but I do feel the siren call of my holiday, my imminent holiday, getting ever louder. But Mystery Hour, of course, puts us all in a holiday mood once a week, whatever the weather, on Thursdays from 12. If you provide my favourite contribution of the week, you will win a Mystery Hour board game. Soon, perhaps, to become a collector's item, because we are poised, hopefully before Christmas, to release Mystery Hour The Travel Edition, which is a slightly different game with an entirely new bunch of questions and answers, it's a lot more portable. It fit in your pocket, and you can play it on trains and in cars, so, or indeed on aeroplanes or hovercrafts. In fact, you can play it anywhere you want. That's why it's called the Travel Edition, and it should be with us before Christmas! But if you want to win the classic, the original, the Mystery Hour 1.0 version, then provide my favourite contribution of the week, and it's yours. Full terms and conditions can be found at lbc.co.uk, and keep an eye on mysteryhour.co.uk website if you want to get hold of your own version of the game, or look out for announcements regarding the imminent new one. 5 minutes after 12 is the time. Should we just crack on? I think we should. It's a weird one, this, you know. Maybe it's to do with how often I remind you. So most weeks at about 5 to 12, my phone board starts flashing furiously. And I think, what's going on there? What have I done? Oh, it's Thursday. People are getting in early for Mystery Hour. And then some weeks, it actually doesn't happen at all. Now, it might be because the conversation that we're having in the penultimate hour, the middle hour of the programme, is really heavy. That is sometimes the case, and therefore perhaps the mood doesn't lend itself to booking your place early for Mystery Hour. Or it might be because today I remembered to give you some reminders, and that is why the board was buzzing before we even got to the 12 noon news. But don't be put off if you can't get through, because some people ringing in are asking questions that aren't quite as funny or as interesting as they think. No offence at all intended. And some people have been on before or are asking a question that we dealt with relatively recently, so we probably won't go in again. And some people, even after all these years, ring in with motoring questions. How much harder do I have to work to remind you that I don't like motoring questions? I don't like motoring phone-ins, and I don't like motoring questions. I do, however, like clever jokes, like this one from Sanjeev. Is the Mystery Hour Travel Edition catamaran-friendly, James? Only fast catamarans, Sanjeev. Only fast catamarans. It's 7 minutes after 12. Max is in Matlock. Max, question or answer?
It's a question.
Carry on, Max.
I was cooking a Thai curry yesterday, and I bought some...
Green or red?
Green it was, actually.
Very nice.
And I'd bought some freshly peeled prawns, so they're white and blue. And when you cook them, they go orange, don't they?
Yeah.
And so did lobster go orange, crayfish go orange, nothing else does. Well, why is that? Why do crustaceans go orange?
When you cook them?
Yeah, nothing else does.
Well, why does toast go brown?
Well, that's because it's burned.
Yeah. True. It wasn't quite the zinger question that I thought it was when I came up with that one, Max. it's one of those days. Pink. Yeah, so just the science of it. What's going on with the science of it?
It's just always... Nothing else does, does it? Just those things tend
don't
to
think
get
so,
quite
no.
orange.
I don't think it does. I like that. Was it nice, the curry?
Yes, very nice. Did
you use Thai basil or did you just improvise?
Thai basil, but I did cheat with the paste. I get it from my local Asian supermarket.
That's not cheating. I mean, making your own paste is a right old palaver.
I've only done it once, so I won't do it again.
Some of the bottled ones are amazing. I got the Dishoom recipe book. You know the Indian restaurant Dishoom. Their recipe book is incredible because you really are making stuff that is. On a par with the stuff that they serve up in their restaurants. So I love cooking curry. It's therapeutic, isn't it, Max? Sometimes.
It is, yeah.
Get the curry on the go. All right, well, let's find out. Why do prawns go pink? Did you ever see a panther? No, panthers also... No, not funny. 1209. Trevor's in Bournemouth. Trevor, question or answer?
Afternoon, James. It's a question.
Hello, Trevor. How can I help?
So, I'm not sure if you've ever pulled your back before and you've been fortunate enough for someone to rub a bit of ibuprofen cream into painful area.
I have, actually. Voltarol is also available, and Deep Heat, a nice spray sometimes does the job as well.
And all other good brands, yeah.
Indeed.
I'm assuming that the ibuprofen drug part of the cream enters the bloodstream to help, like you would normally take an ibuprofen tablet, to help reduce the pain.
So am I.
Yeah, similar to something like when you go to a petrol pump, you wear gloves if you're using the diesel pump because previously they found a connection with some horrible diseases that if you use it lots, it could enter your skin.
Really?
You know,
do you do that? I've never done that. We had a diesel.
You've never used the clear gloves that are by the bins?
No.
That's what they're there for.
Oh,
yeah,
my
days. Oh, crikey, James. Well, my question leads on to...
Well, don't just gloss over it like that. How often do you have to do it to be in danger?
Is it a motoring question?
It's not a motoring question. It's a poisoning question, Keith.
It's a poisoning question. Yeah. That could be for another day. But, for as long as I've known, the reason you provided the gloves on a diesel pump and advised to wear them is because they want to avoid it getting into your...
All right, well, you live and learn. So what we're talking about is the absorption of chemicals into skin, into skin or bloodstream, et cetera,
Which leads me to my question.
Here we go.
Since the days of COVID, I've been regularly using and probably overusing because I'm a bit paranoid about cleanliness.
Yes.
Hand sanitizer with a certain amount of alcohol limit in there. So the one I've got in front of me now in my car, 70% hand sanitizing gel with alcohol, etc. My question is...
What percentage of it is alcohol? 70%?
It's 70% alcohol.
70% alcohol, okay.
Oh, crikey, you put this on your hands and smell it, it knocks you out.
Yeah,
it's like heavy stuff.
I know the stuff. I've never read the label, that's all. I recognise what you describe. I think I know what question you're going to ask.
Yeah. Does that go into your bloodstream? And if so, does that have any detrimental effects of your liver or anything else, potentially?
Well, I mean, I was thinking more about getting caught drink driving or something like that. What if you bathed in it? If you got a big bar full of hand sanitizer?
Yeah.
You'd have to call it body sanitizer, I suppose, technically, at this point. And then you got in it and you just lay there in it, tingling, and possibly getting a bit tipsy.
Yeah, well, I think we'd avoid that question because that could be an out for anybody who gets pulled up drink driving. Oh, I've been using hand sanitizer. So
I think they'd be able, if it were true, you'd want to know, wouldn't you?
Well, you would, yes.
Right, you're on. Yeah, I like it. Do you absorb alcohol? Do you actually increase the alcohol in your bloodstream by using hand sanitizer? I don't think it's going to have much impact on your liver unless you start drinking the stuff. But and don't do that, whatever happens. 12 minutes after 12 is the time. I like that. So topical pain and freshly peeled prawns. That's weird. I both names of bands that I've been in. Ben's in Cheltenham. Ben, question or answer?
Hello, question, please.
Carry on, Ben.
When I was younger and at school, I used to take in a 330 ml can of drink.
Did you?
when I came round to drink it, I always used to tap the top of it,
yeah,
with the theory being that it would then make it not fizz up and go all over the place. I've done that ever since, and my question is, does that actually do anything, or is it just a myth?
Well, I mean, there's only one way to find out.
Yeah.
How many tins have you got handy?
None at the moment. No.
Give him a shake and yeah. Pop to your uncle. I think it yeah. does have a scientific rationale behind it. And I mean, it'd be amazed if we haven't done this one before, but I can't remember. Yeah. I can't remember doing it before. If it's not true, I don't really want to know. But I like it. I feel that you were taking something away from me that feels almost like a tradition.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. If it's up there now, yeah. I mean, we'll have to find out if a scientist or someone can tell us. Well, so some people may not know about it. You tap the bit of the ring pull that's
yeah, just tap the bit
sealed.
That you then pop open, yeah.
And then you pop it open, and if you've given it a tap, it's not going to fizz over, and if you haven't given it a tap, it might. You're on. I like it.
Thank
top,
you.
Top, tap the tin, topical pain, and freshly peeled prawns. Got a lovely alliterative. I'm going to try, and I will almost certainly fail, to turn every question this week into an alliteration. Because we need little games, don't we? We need new games. So you've got freshly peeled prawns being an alliteration. Topical pain, and that's not really an alliteration. Felt like an alliteration because P's got a P in the middle of it. So topical treatments. Topical treatments of pain. And tap the tin, I'm going with. See, tap the tin, not tap the can, but tap the tin. Thank you, Ben. Carol is in Malmesbury in Wiltshire. Carol, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Yes.
I want to know when people read out a telephone number, they mix up the O's and the zeros when there's no such thing as an O in a telephone number. I hear you every morning or every time you talk yeah. about ringing in, and you say O,
3, 4, 5, 6, 0,
9, 7, 3. But they're not O's, they're zeros.
Yeah.
And some people I know even mix them up and say something like 0345606060.
Yeah.
Now, what causes us to mix them, and why do some people do that?
Blimey, it's a bit complex. Isn't it?
No.
I mean, what makes you think there's going to be an answer to that?
Because there must be a reason. I initially thought it might be going back to the days of when we had alphabet letters on dial telephones.
Yeah.
But no, because they don't correspond to the number, so it's not that. Then I thought it might be something to do with the sound of the...
You've given this a lot of thought, Carol.
Yeah. I've been ringing in for 4 weeks trying to
get this on the board. Well, I shall try. What number did you ring?
I rang 0345.
Oh, I was going to trip you up there. I thought I might. But no, I didn't. I failed.
Done.
Didn't even work.
No.
Well, it's shorter, isn't it? So I guess that might be the answer. I'm not going to take a round of applause for that.
The thing is, yeah. I'm a retired ex-programmer, okay?
Okay.
And if I was to put an O in a telephone number or in any coding,
yeah.
instead of a zero, it would fall flat on its face. So it is actually important.
Well, what was James Bond's code name?
Yeah, you're right.
Thank
007.
You. Yeah.
Didn't
do him any harm. 007, right, you're on. I think Carol dropped off there. We shall endeavour to find out for you. I think it's just because it's easier to say. It looks like an O. And everyone knows. And I can't get... So that didn't last very long, did it? The attempt to turn every question into an alliteration. Why do we say O instead of zero? There's no... I'm never going to get an alliteration. I mean, Zs. First up, first question up, full of Zs. So I'm going to do alliteration, and the first question is a Z. Zs. Zs to the left of me. Clive's in Sheffield. Well, no, he is, but I'm not going to talk to him now because it's time for this.
This is LBC.
It's official. We're the Lidlest on price. Which have crowned us the cheapest supermarket this July, beating 7 other supermarkets, including their loyalty prices. For the Lidlest prices, you know you can always rely on us. Now that's big on quality and always Lidl on price.
Findings based on independent price comparison of 76 items by which every day in July 2025.
I'm Dr. Andrew Darwood from the Darwood & Tanner Dental Practice. For over 30 years now, with co-founder Dr. Susan Tanner, we've assembled a dedicated and caring multidisciplinary team of dental experts who are at the forefront of their field, all with just one purpose in mind, creating the most comprehensive, tailored and complete dental implant treatments to keep you smiling.
For more on dental implants and our full range of treatments, visit darwoodandtanner.co.uk.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Ever want a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6.
T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
Bring your pensions together into one easy-to-manage online plan with PensionBee. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
I've got the best. You really are. I don't deserve you. So people are having a go at trying to turn Carol's question about zeros into an alliteration. As you give up, I give up too easily. You're tougher than me. I like this from Chris. Ollie as the name that he goes by. How about numerical nuance, James, says Ollie the van driver in Bolton. Numerical nuance, yeah, well played. It's probably not the winner, though, because you don't necessarily know what the question is as a consequence of that question. Tim in Oxford went for not using naught. That's quite good, but it's not actually relevant to the question because it's not about not using naught. It's about not using zero. And I know naught and zero are synonyms, one perhaps being a little bit more English and the other a bit more American, but it's not, it doesn't quite work. This, however, from Craig, naught nomenclature. Naught nomenclature. That is a beautiful alliteration. The nomenclature of naught, you could call it. It sounds like a sort of Divine Comedy album. So that's on the board, and I think that the alliteration challenge is still live. 12:19 is the time. Clive is still in Sheffield. Clive, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on, Clive.
So, 2 hours ago, a pigeon flew into my garden.
Oh, yes.
It's either a racing pigeon or a homing pigeon.
How'd you tell the difference?
Well, it's not got go-faster stripes on its wings.
Aren't all racing pigeons homing pigeons?
Well, yeah.
Go on.
And I can tell it's one of those because it's got little tags on both of its legs.
Oh.
But I can't get close enough to read them. And it's been in the garden now for 2 hours. Oh. I've been out, I put a bit of seed down and it's eating the seed.
Oh, bless you.
And it's had a bit of a drink from the pond.
That's nice.
So it's either having a rest or it's lost.
Yeah.
And I got to thinking, what do you do with a lost homing pigeon?
Isn't that a song?
Well, it could be.
What do you do with a lost homing pigeon?
If I was like a pedigree homing pigeon keeper in Cornwall, and I had 500 of them, and I lived in Cornwall for 10 years, and then I had to go and live in Glasgow, do I have to leave my pigeons in Cornwall because the next time I let them off, they go back to Cornwall, or would they follow me to Glasgow?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I don't know which one
you
want.
I'm not sure it is a good one.
No, it is a good one, but you're only allowed one. So are you going to ask, what should I do with the lost homing pigeon or the one about Glasgow and Cornwall? You can't ask both.
I think Glasgow and Cornwall because the other one we can sing.
Yeah, but you never go. You could still be there next week.
Well, if it's not there, if it's still here next week, I'm sure one of the cats will have got it or something.
Oh, no. Could it have a tag on it, do you think? Do you think they carry tags?
It's got a tag on both feet. It's got a red one on one foot, and it's got a normal coloured, like a plain coloured one on the other one. But I can't get close enough to read them.
Have you tried binoculars?
good idea. Telescope, will that work?
Yes, exactly. I am going to do something I've never done before. I'm going to crowdsource this question. I'm going to let people, because I know you've rung in with it, but you've asked two. So I'm going to let everyone listening decide which one they want to go on the board. Do you want the Glasgow question, or do you want the lost pigeon question? Which one should I ask?
That sounds like you're being very fair, James.
Because there'll be a lot of people listening who are going to be disappointed if we go one way and not the other, so I'm going to make it a democratic decision, Clive.
There you go.
Lovely stuff, thank you. My granddad, who I never met, my mum's dad, he kept birds in Sheffield, would you believe? Small world.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he's still looking at me as I'm speaking to you.
Well, he knows you're talking about him.
Well, yeah, I was going to put the phone to his ear, but...
84850 to WhatsApp your answer. What do you want, the Glasgow question or the lost pigeon question? Get it out of the way quickly. Seriously, so WhatsApp it to 84850. I don't want to be overwhelmed. Thank you, Clive. Lovely stuff. 034560... I can't remember it if I say zero. 0345. 0345 0 0 what? Oh, I don't know. 60 what? Oh, Stephen's in Lakenheath. Stephen, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on, Stephen.
So it's a question about hay bales.
Oh,
so
just, my yeah, first band was called the Hay Bales. Carry on.
I knew you were going to say that.
Sorry.
Just driving back from the supermarket. I live in West Suffolk. It's quite rural.
Yeah.
Lots of farmers' fields. Lots of hay bales. First ones I saw were cylindrical, and then the next field, they were kind of cuboid, and then the next field, there was a mixture of both.
Mm.
So why are they different shapes?
Mm. I like that question. I think that the cylindrical ones are bigger.
Right.
And I don't know whether that's relevant to the question, or indeed, more importantly, to the answer.
They look the similar size.
Did
I wondered if it was to do with stacking, but then why would they have two different types in the same field? Odd.
Hmm. Why are there different shaped hay bales? I mean, you wouldn't be able to stack cylindrical ones as effectively in a barn over winter, would you?
No.
So that might be why. But then why bother having different types unstacked?
Yeah, yeah.
So why have we got different types of hay bales?
Yeah.
But the problem is no farmers are going to ring me because they're furious that I just revealed all the facts on the inheritance tax story. I'll try and find out for you. Thank you, Stephen. Hay bales. Hay bales and pigeons. I've given up on the alliteration, Keith. Can you remind me of these things? Hay bales. Bale-based... bamboozled. Bamboozled by bales in Lakenheath. There is bamboozled by bales. Sorry for shouting. I got a bit overexcited then. What did we call the 01? Nought nomenclature. We love that one. Nought nomenclature and the pigeon. What about the pigeon? Pigeon problem. Pigeon problem. Yeah? Pigeon problems. Pigeon problems. Now, which pigeon problem would you like us to solve? Let me consult my board. We're going... Oh, no. Oh, it's very close, but I think Glasgow's got the edge. I think the one about if you move house with homing pigeons, what happens has got the edge. So pigeon problems, nought nomenclature, tap the tin, freshly peeled prawns, and what did I say on the topical pain one? Anyway, Aidan's in Bicester. Put us out of our misery, Aidan, and interrupt me. Question or answer?
It's Adrian, and it's an answer site.
Carry on, Adrian. Did I say Aidan?
You did indeed.
I'm so sorry. Everything's going wrong today. Well, you shouldn't get it here, Adrian. We should be better than that. What is your answer? Which question are you going to answer?
It's about the city cans and tapping the side or tapping the top.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so tapping the top of the can probably won't do so much for you as tapping the side of the can, and it's to do with a scientific word called nucleation.
Right.
Essentially, the anterior wall of a can of fizzy drink has a lot of imperfections in it.
Yes.
To which the bubbles of gas that form in liquid adhere. And we call this nucleation points or nucleation centers. So what happens is when you shake that can and you open it, all of that gas tries to depressurize, carrying the liquid above it up first and through the top, followed by the gas.
Yeah.
Hence all the hilarious spraying in the face.
Yeah.
But if you snap on the side of the can, you release all of those bubbles which rise to the top, and they will escape first when you open the can.
With a satisfying whoosh.
With a little whoosh.
Qualifications?
I'm boring. I listen to a lot of podcasts from science communicators.
It's not boring. That's not boring. It's not boring. It's more interesting than a lot of other things you could be doing with your time.
Yeah, true. So this came from one of my idols, a guy called Dr. Karl Krusielnicki. He is one of Australia's national treasures.
Wow.
And probably the greatest science communicator ever.
That's amazing. And he covered it on his podcast, did he?
Many, many times, along with a load of other really interesting stuff.
Just like Mystria. Round of applause for Adrian.
Thanks, sir.
No, thank you. 27 after 12 is the time. David is in Stonehaven. Question or answer, David?
I've got an answer for you.
Carry on.
So it is an answer to the question about alcohol hand gels.
Oh, yes.
So the quick version is no, you won't get drunk from excessive use of alcohol hand gel.
Oh.
So
why not?
So most of the alcohol that's in your hand gel goes straight onto your hands, kills the bugs, and then evaporates off into the atmosphere. So actually,
it
would have to absorb incredibly quickly, which it doesn't, to get into your bloodstream. Now, there's been science done on this. So there's been studies where they've had healthy volunteers repeatedly applying hand gel and then having their blood alcohol levels measured.
Oh, really?
Yeah, absolutely. And what they found was that, no, there was either zero alcohol in their blood or absolutely tiny, negligible amounts. Now, there are some things which could cause it to absorb just a little bit, and that'll be if you've got any cuts or abrasions on your hand, so breaking the skin so it gets straight into your bloodstream.
How is it being absorbed otherwise, like the tiny, tiny amounts, if it's not through abrasions? What would that process be called?
So theoretically, you could get a bit of transdermal absorption, but normally your skin's actually really good at keeping out big molecules.
Is there a more common word for transdermal absorption that people might be familiar with?
I would just use the word absorption. Transdermal is very posh doctor speak for through your skin.
So
it just
makes
it sound cleverer.
It's not osmosis.
It's not osmosis. Sorry.
No, I don't know if we're supposed to play the hallelujah if I'm using it incorrectly. I don't know what the rules are. Qualifications, David?
I'm a public health doctor.
Are you? Oh, well, that's convenient. Forgive me. I know I'm too old to be asking questions like this, really, but I can't help the way my mind works. What if I had a bath in a big vat of hand gel, a bath full of hand gel?
I think you've got bigger problems than the absorption, mate.
Very nice. It's coming up to 12:30. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we are still bamboozled by Bales. We still have a pigeon problem. We're looking into naught nomenclature. We have tapped the tin, looking at the freshly peeled prawns and the... what was the one I came up with for topical pain? I've forgotten what it was. It was quite good. But anyway, I'll fix it during the very latest news headlines with Amelia Cox.
The Kremlin says ending what it called the Ukrainian crisis will be at the centre of a meeting between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. Officials say the US and Russian leaders will also discuss economic cooperation when they hold talks in Alaska tomorrow. The man accused of driving into crowds at Liverpool's Premier League victory parade is facing 24 new charges. More than 100 people were injured when a car hit fans in May. And boys have outperformed girls at A-level for the first time in 7 years. A record number of 18-year-olds have also secured a place at their first-choice university. LBC weather, very warm and humid today, but cooler than yesterday. Sunny spells with scattered showers and a risk of thunder in Scotland, a high of 28 degrees.
This is LBC.
At This Vets, me as the owner, surgeon, rotor manager and puppy wrangler, and now she and her team are cybersecurity experts too.
Mia, someone tried accessing our system. Phishing scam. I blocked it.
BT Security Awareness Training turns your team into your first line of defence. Quick to set up from just £1.25 per user per month. Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Thankfully, not just Mia's. Search BT Business Cybersecurity. T&Cs apply. Prices exclude VAT at 20%. 12-month minimum term applies.
Thanks to a blend of petrol and electric, fill up less this summer with the self-charging Mazda 2 Hybrid Centerline. It's available to finance for £199 per month with 0% APR representative. To go further for less this summer, search Mazda 2 Hybrid. Mazda Financial Services, PCP over 48 months, deposit of 5395, optional final payment of 9833. Indemnities may be required, terms apply, see website.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900. That's ADVICE to 78900.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Rocky Soft Play.
Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quaterpillar, Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
12:32 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Topical treatments was the alliteration, I think. Thank you to Alan for that. But we've answered it now, so I can take it off the board. Pratap is in Islington. Pratap, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's an answer.
Carry on, mate.
It's about the prawns, and the answer has to do with prawns, proteins, and pigments.
Round of applause. Go for Pratap. That's four. Four P's. Carry on.
So, prawns contain a pigment called astaxanthin, and it is a type of carotenoid also found in carrots, which gives them their orange colour. Now, normally, this pigment is bound to the protein, which is called crustacionin. Mm. And once prawns are starting to cook, the crustacionin protein starts to denature and shrink. And in that process, they squeeze out the pigment, which then colours the rest of the prawns.
Qualifications, please.
I'm a chef who's allergic to shellfish.
We've spoken before.
Yes, we have.
I remember that, the chef who's allergic to shellfish, stuck in my memory for some reason. It sounds a bit like a sort of Julia Donaldson book or something like that, doesn't it? And I think I asked you last time, but do you prepare shellfish for clients?
I do not anymore. No. I can't touch it, I can't smell it being cooked, and wow. I can't eat it. But if it's dried, fermented, or pickled, the protein denatures to a degree that it is not toxic to me anymore. So I can take small amounts of dried shrimp, shrimp paste, fermented shrimp.
Okay, so we're back to the lad who made the Thai curry, actually. So I like that. Because you'd want some shrimp in that, some fermented. Do you know on the crispy seaweed in a Chinese restaurant, Pratap?
Yes.
What's the orange stuff on top of that?
It's usually something called, that would normally be a, some sort of seasoning on top of that.
Is it not shrimp? It's not dried shrimp?
Not necessarily.
In a powder. Can you buy dried? Can you buy dried shrimp in a powder?
You can.
Where from?
From most Oriental stores.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Right. I'm going to go and get. I'm literally next to Chinatown as we speak, so I'm going to go and get some after the show today because I've started making. You'll like this as a chef. Just two chefs here chewing the fat. I've started making my own version of crispy seaweed using kale in the air fryer, and it's actually not bad at all. But what I haven't got is that orangey thing, and I've said online it was probably dried shrimp powder, and I haven't been able to find any in Brentford, so I'm going to cast.
You can also try something, James.
Yes.
A couple of Japanese seasonings. One is called togarashi,
mm-hmm.
which is chili, sesame, and Sichuan pepper.
Oh, hello. Yes.
And then you get furikake, which is not a powder as such, but that has bits of flaked seaweed, and it's got other. It's mostly used as a rice seasoning, but it would go really well with seaweed.
Furutaki, and what was the first one?
Togarashi
and furutaki. Thank
yes.
you. I love it. You've already got a round of applause. Are you working on anything special today?
Today I am making a miso from smoked cherries.
Just my mouth waters. Pratap, stay safe. Thank you for that.
Thank you, James. Bye.
Lovely stuff. 12:36 is the time. Richard's in Watford. Richard, question or answer?
Question.
In your own time, Richard.
Thank you. Okay, so we've always had lots of dead flies around the house, but recently, in fact, just last week, I purchased some liquid to put around the window frames, and I now have hundreds and hundreds of dead flies. Question is, or the point is...
Have you got a body in the cellar? That's the question, Richard, that everyone wants answering.
That's not a question.
Okay,
the question
on.
Is, well, the fact is that every single dead fly that I have ever had to dispose of lies there with its legs up in the air.
Yeah.
And my question is, why do all dead flies lie with their legs up in the air?
It's about weight distribution.
I don't... No, because if
no,
it,
you die, so as soon
you
as it dies, it's you know. Have you ever seen a fly walk up a wall?
Yes.
So we can agree that flies have sticky feet.
Yes.
So the minute the fly dies, it ceases to, or shortly after the fly dies, because it can stay stuck to the wall for a while. We had that question a couple of weeks ago. It ceases to produce these sticky secretions that allow it to stick its feet to the walls, right?
No sticky stuff left.
No sticky stuff left. Well played on the alliterations. And at that point, the body flips over because of weight distribution. Thank you for that sigh. I think I deserved it.
If you say so.
They were very, very, very gracious. I don't know why. But I mean, it must be that, though. It has to be something to do with gravity. They don't, like, roll over in their dying moments, do they, with their feet up in the air?
Well, they don't have very far to fall in some cases.
No, but anyway, the question is on the board.
Okay.
But I am troubled by how many flies you have in your house.
So am I.
Well, what are we going to do about it, Richard?
They come in from the garden.
Do they?
They can smell my wife's cooking, and they love it so much, they come in droves.
Well, I don't know that... I mean, have you thought about getting one of those ultraviolet exterminators?
We've got
one of those.
No.
We got one of those that go every few seconds. You can get one like that. It might have ethical objections to that.
And when they drop on the floor,
yeah.
What way up are they, Jay?
do you know what? Their legs are in the air. We've got to get Richard an answer. Thank you, Richard. 12:39 is the time. 03456060973 is the number you need. Brian's in Loughborough. Brian, question or answer?
Hi, James. I've got an answer for you about sizes of bales of hay and straw.
Fly's feet is the alliteration on the last one, Brian, and you're about to give us the bale-based bamboozle. Carry on.
Exactly. This is about historical evolution of agricultural bales. We started off with... There's actually three main types. We started off with small rectangular bales that you could put on your shoulder. They were quite complicated to handle, but they suited the small tractors of, you know, early tractor evolution from horses. And then tractors got bigger. Someone had the smart idea of going up to round, larger bales that you could put on a spike on the front of your tractor and lift quite easy. They're quite easy to handle and move around. Someone else then had the smart idea that, as you alluded to, they're not the most efficient use of space. So what about large square bales that stack more, you know, you stack more into a barn?
So as the vehicles got bigger, the size of the bale got bigger too?
It's partly that, but partly also the large round and square bales suited being wrapped in plastic. So for hay, you could turn it into silage, which is quite good for feeding animals. And that's...
Why would you ever want a large cylinder one as opposed to a large... What advantage does the large cylinder have over a large rectangle?
I think it's just that's what came in between. And I think there's an element of this machinery is quite expensive. You keep it running for a long time, and if you're busy at this time of year, you just bring all the machinery out, hence why you're seeing two different shapes in an adjacent field.
Okay, you've just answered the next bit, why they'd be nearby. And you can't flick a switch from, like, rectangle to a cylinder on the baler.
Totally different type of baler.
Yeah, well, you don't have to say it like I'm stupid.
Sorry.
I thought it was a perfectly reasonable question. I'm only saying what everyone's thinking, Brian. What are your qualifications?
Farmer's son.
Why did you do that long R before you said farmer's son? I liked it. It added to it. It created a bit of tension.
I feared the next question would be, did I get into farming? And the answer being no.
That's all right. I mean, I'm not going to say anything about inheritance tax at this point because it would be inappropriate. But, you know, a lot of people don't follow their fathers into farming. A lad I was at school with when I was 10 or 11, I always remembered him. He got back in touch a few years ago because obviously I'm quite easy to find now. Lovely bloke. And I remember him when I went round to his house for what today we would call a play date. But obviously back then we just said, I'm going round to his house. And he had so much to do, Brian. His dad was the farmer, but he had so many chores. He had to go and feed the pigs. He had to go and chop logs. And I'm sitting there thinking, flipping heck. That's why you didn't follow your father into farming, because it's bloody hard work.
You work for your pocket money if you're a farmer's son.
Yeah, that. Round of applause for Brian. Lovely stuff. And the bale-based bamboozle has been dealt with by Brian. Okay. So Pratap got the prawns. And Brian got the bales. We're not opening up a whole new dimension of alliterations here, are we? What other questions have been answered so far? Who answered the tap the tin question? What's the name of the fellow who answered the tap the tin question? So, can we remember? No, it's bloody Adrian, wasn't it? That's no good. Oh, well. It's nice while it lasted. I tell you what, you wait ages for someone called Brian to ring in, and then two come along at once. Here's Brian in Worthing. Brian, question or answer?
It's a question, if I may, James.
Of course you may, Brian.
Yeah, well, I promise I won't say what you told me not to say the last time I phoned in.
What was that?
Well, I'm not allowed to say.
Oh,
you told me... But James, you told me, whatever you do, do not say that the next time you phone in.
Right.
So I won't say it, I promise.
Thank goodness for that. Thank you, Brian.
Well, there we go. My question is, my question is, James, when you have a sneeze and you can feel it at the back of your nostrils, and then you sneeze maybe 7 or 8 times, what starts a sneeze, and then what stops the last sneeze when you've got your handkerchief? It's on hay fever. Yeah. So something initiates a sneeze. So you do a great inhalation of breath and whack, and you whack
well,
it out.
Well, it's a little tickle.
Sorry?
It's a little tickle.
Oh.
It's a little bit of something a bit of pollen or a bit of dust.
Well, that's what I'm saying, James. What is it? What initiated? Because I had it yesterday. I said, a sneeze is coming on, and I did about 8 of them, and then all of a sudden they stopped.
Do you know, someone once told me that if you did 4 sneezes in a row, the pleasure equivalent was to an orgasm.
You're being rude now.
I'm not, I'm just sharing, it's science.
Well, there you go.
It's science.
I want the answer.
Well, I just wondered if that tallied with your experience.
Well, I don't know, mate. Well, I had a sleep. I had the sneezes yesterday. I said, oh, I can feel it coming on. I can feel it in the back of my...
What causes it, then? What causes the sneeze? I'm repeating the question. I'm not asking you. That would be weird. What causes the sneeze, Brian?
Yeah. Well, no, what causes the sneeze...
Yeah.
I know I'm not allowed a second question, but what ends the last sneeze?
I'll tell you what. If someone rings in to answer it, I will judge them. And if they sound like they know what they're talking about, I will ask them the second question as well. So you're talking about a series of sneezes, which is pleasingly alliterative. A series of sneezes ceases. The cessation of a series of sneezes, but also the beginning, the start of sneezes. Sneezes start. A series of sneezes starts. I'd like to apologise to anyone who's tuned in the last 2 to 3 minutes for... probably presenting you with quite a lot of confusion about what the hell it is that you've stumbled across.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
The case against a grandmother who peacefully invited conversation to women using an abortion clinic has been dropped. Does her free speech extend to this?
Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
The people have spoken. Drivers have voted. And the Auto Express Driver Power Family Car of the Year is, wait for it, the Vauxhall Astra. Chosen for its design, drive and onboard tech. Get behind the wheel and experience the award-winning Vauxhall Astra Griffin Hatch or Sports Tourer today. 2 models, 1 offer. Both $325 a month with $325 initial rental. Search Astra Griffin now. Personal contract hire and Astra Griffin 1.2 manual hatchback or Sports Tourer. 48 months, T's and C's, subject to status and availability. You will not own the car. Stellantis Financial Services.
Outlet shopping at the O2. Get up to 70% off RRP on over 60 designer brands, including Nike, Adidas, Levi's, Sunglass Hut, the cosmetics company store, Le Creuset, and more. Plus, why not make a day of it with over 30 bars and restaurants, a cinema, bowling, interactive football, and more. There's so much to do at the O2 this summer. Find us at North Greenwich, just 15 minutes from central London. Search Outlet Shopping at the O2 to start planning your visit.
When we're little, we don't overthink things. We're brave, confident, we laugh and ask questions.
And play.
And play. So why stop there? Just because we're adults, it shouldn't mean we stop trying new things. For me, starting a career in early years has meant not just a new job, but new skills, new friends.
Like me.
Yes, and a new sense of purpose. All that, and I can earn while I learn.
Yay, painting next.
Do something big. Work with small children. Search Early Years Careers to find out more.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including well man, well woman, well baby and well kid. From Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
It's official. We're the Lidlest on price, which have crowned us the cheapest supermarket this July, beating seven other supermarkets, including their loyalty prices. For the Lidlest price, you know you can always rely on us. Now that's big on quality and always little on price.
Findings based on independent price comparison of 76 items by which every day in July 2025.
Huh. Have you ever wondered what a sandwich sounds like? Not much to it, is there? Unless, of course, it's a Walker's sandwich. Mmm, that is good. Now that's what a sarnie should sound like. Go all crisp in with Walker's. Delicious.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
It is 12:48. Why do flies... Why are dead flies always on their backs? What starts a series of sneezes, or indeed stops it? We're no longer bamboozled by bales. The pigeon problem. Clive's pigeon problem, please. The nomenclature of naught. I didn't think we were going to get an answer for Carol, but why do we say O instead of zero? Is there like a definitive answer to that question? And we've actually done the rest. I misspoke. It wasn't prawns. It was blooming scallops. It's dried scallop powder that's on top of crispy seaweed. It's not seaweed, by the way, when you order it in a Chinese restaurant. It's usually sort of cabbage or maybe even kale. I use kale in the air fryer, and I've done that pretty close now to getting it right. It's just quantities and dressing that's tricky. But I don't know where to get dried scallop powder. I will try Chinatown and report back. It is 12:49, and Neil is in Clacton. Neil, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on, Neil.
So, James, jackpot joy.
Jackpot.
Why do we call it a jackpot?
Jackpot joy. Have you just given me the alliteration already?
We have.
Oh, yes, flipping it. Only all listeners James. Are like you. Carry on. Jackpot.
Yeah, so why is it called a jackpot? I understand, you know, you win a pot of money, but what's the jack got to do with it?
So, the new Mystery Hour board game, which hopefully will be with us before Christmas, is slightly different from the old one in that you don't have to make up your own answer. We've got one correct answer and two incorrect answers, but they are really funny. And some of the questions that lend themselves to very funny but highly plausible wrong answers are just brilliant. I mean, I could read them for fun even if I wasn't playing the game. And this is one of those questions, isn't it? If we had a bit of a longer run-up, we could come up with a plausible, ridiculous answer to why we call a jackpot a jackpot. The pot with the jacks in, I suppose, most obviously. So it might have something to do with cards.
Okay.
I don't know, though. I like it. I don't know,
because you can win a jackpot from a fruit machine.
Mate. But, I mean, it obviously began somewhere, didn't it? It's, you can do a hat trick in all sorts of sports now, but it began with cricket, we think. I like it.
Thank you.
No, thank you. Jackpot. Why is a jackpot called a jackpot? And if we need to turn it into an alliteration, it's jackpot joy. Jackpot joy. I think she's a cousin of Dirty Gertie from Number 30. Frank's in King's Lynn. Frank, question or answer?
I've got an answer for you, James.
Carry on, Frank.
And it's zeros and O's.
Yes.
And it's to do with clarity when you're communicating with people. If you've been working with the emergency services or been in the armed forces or even a radio ham, you never say O when you're talking about a number. It will always be zero because it's, if you've got background noise, then it's much more clear.
Oh.
And
I mean, zero.
And also... Yeah, so zero is the... Yeah, exactly. Oh. Oh, do you mean double O?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
That. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So that's the reason... So it doesn't answer the question of why we substitute it, but we substitute it simply because it's shorter.
It's shorter, it's clearer. And, of course, a lot of people have never been in the armed forces, never done a radio, shortwave radio course. I had to redo mine because I work with the National Coast Watch up at Brancaster.
Oh, lovely.
When we're talking to the emergency services, we never, when we spell something out, we spell it out phonetically, the Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta. And with numbers, we try and pronounce them clearly. So, I mean...
No, well, you have to, don't you? You can't be messing about.
Yeah, believe it or not, three is pronounced tree.
Of course. No, I did know that. And you've told us what your us what your qualifications are. What is the what's the facility at Brancaster then?
If you know the golf,
yes,
the Royal West Norfolk thingy,
yeah,
overlooking the sea wall is our watch hut.
It's a tiny little hut.
And if we're flying a flag, we're at home.
Well, I'm going to come and say hello.
People on the beaches.
I'm often
please
there.
Please do.
I will. Yeah, I'll look for the flag first,
because,
Frank.
Because, I mean, to give you an idea of how important it's been this year, if I may.
Yes.
We've had the lifeboat out, I think, five or six times, and 60 people have been picked up in total.
That's fantastic.
Out to the wreck.
Where does the of course, yes, to have a butcher's. Where does the lifeboat come from?
Either from Wells or from Hunstanton.
Where's the lifeboat in Wales?
It's out on the out on the coast bit.
Oh, it's right up the top. The RNLI life. Sorry, I'm going mad. I was in Cromer recently. I was at the Wells lifeboat station about 6 weeks ago. I love all that. And you know, my friend Michael is in the RNLI, don't you? He was on the latest BBC documentary. Down in Dover.
Yes, I've been watching that.
He was in the Dover crew. Did you see him? It said journalist on the screen. That was Michael who used to...
Yes, indeed. Yeah,
very brave. Yeah. I'm so proud of him. It's incredible what they do, isn't it? It really is. Frank, have a round of applause on me.
Thank you.
And I'll see you in Brancaster. Where would we retire to afterwards? Would it be the White Horse, do you think, on the state? Or is there somewhere a bit closer?
The White Horse or the ship.
We like the ship as well. Yeah. I'm going away going to Greece for my holidays, but I do often I miss Norfolk. Thank you. Tom's in Torquay, staying at the seaside. Tom, question or answer?
Hello, James. There's some more alliteration there for you.
Well played.
Tom in Torquay.
Tom in Torquay. Is that your real name, or did you just adopt it to please me?
No, that's actually me, and that's actually my location.
Carry on.
It's an answer to the fly question.
Yes.
And you were getting onto the right thing when you noticed it was something to do with weight distribution. It's unstable equilibrium. So the fly, the body of the fly is top heavy. If you think about looking at the little dead fly with its legs up in the air, those legs are a little stick thin, aren't they? And the head and the thorax are really heavy compared to those little legs. So when the fly is alive and its nervous system is still operational, it can control its muscles to keep itself upright, even though it's top heavy. Like you and me, you know, we stand on our two feet, and if you stand still for a minute, you can feel your toes and your feet and your little muscles just adjusting to keep you upright.
Hang on a minute. My muscles aren't little.
Okay, sorry.
Carry on.
Sorry.
Yes,
apologize.
That's right.
But when it dies, that nervous system stops and rigor mortis sets in. And the unstable equilibrium bit comes... Imagine a wobbly tripod or something like that.
Okay.
And imagine trying to get it to stand upright by throwing it up in the air and hoping it lands on its three legs. It wouldn't. It would just fall over all the time.
One in a million or something, some crazy chance.
Something like that. So one in a million dead flies might end up the right way up, but that's essentially it. You know, you could put the dead fly...
What a beautiful answer.
You could put the dead fly down with your hand the right way up and it would stay there, but... with everything that goes on, small
adjustments. So it's gravity. Gravity and weight down.
Gravity pulls it down.
Yeah, and unstable equilibrium. Qualifications?
I'm a mathematician, so we studied lots of that sort of thing when we were doing that. But I also happened to kill a fly in my kitchen this morning, and I noticed exactly the same thing.
Oh, this is incredible. Richard's, I think you've made Richard's day. Have a round of applause on me. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you very much.
Oh, beautiful. This is a vintage mystery hour, isn't it? Absolutely. They all are lately. It's funny. I go through phases. I think, oh, it can't last much longer. We've been doing it forever. And then we just have a really rich seam of mystery hours for a while. And here we are in the middle of one. Tim's in Leek. Tim, question or answer?
It's an answer to the pigeon question.
Is this, would we have filled the board if we do this one? Or have we got any others on the, we haven't got the sneezes and jackpot, have we? Carry on, Tim.
Yes, you can take your pigeons to Glasgow, and that's the follow-up single. the way it works is that you would have to retrain them. So the way it works with homing pigeons is you take them, say, a mile away from their loft and let them fly back.
Yeah.
5 miles and 10 miles, and you build it up over time. And the way that they navigate is through a combination of homing pigeons are able to detect the Earth's magnetic field.
Wow.
They also... are able to navigate through smell, which is what guide dogs do too, and they also use visual clues. So, yes, you can do it, but you would have to go through that retraining period.
Fair enough. Qualifications?
A colleague used to own them, and I asked him the question.
So you probably won't be able to answer the other question then, will you?
Just remind me what that was, sorry.
What should Clive do with the one in his garden?
No, I don't know the answer to that. I do apologise.
No, you don't have to apologise. I probably shouldn't even have asked you. You've earned this.
Oh, thank you.
No, thank you. A beautiful answer. Anne's in Wandsworth. Anne, question or answer?
Well, it's an answer, but it's about the racing pigeon, homing pigeon.
Oh,
but
yes.
It's about how to find the owner.
Oh, yes.
Because I found one years ago, and you contact...
Where did you find it, Anne? Where did you find it?
On the A3.
What? You just...
Yeah, no, you know the roundabout by Wimbledon, Southfields?
Yes.
And it was just on the side bit there, and I went round the side, and I went back, it was still there, and I thought, there's something wrong with this bird. It was just sitting there. So I parked, walked over, and just picked it up. And, of course, it had the little thing on its leg, and I contacted the racing pigeon place. I had to look in for numbers. I can't help you because I'm not online.
That's all right.
And they contacted, they found out who the owner was. He rang me and he had a box sent to me, which I, you know, courier, and it was placed in it and it was returned to him.
Well, I never.
So,
And did you keep in touch? Do we know if the pigeon was okay or?
Oh, no, he got it back okay. That was fine. Because I asked him what it was called and he said, oh, Beauty. They're all called Beauty.
So you've got to get close. So old Clive, he's got to gird his loins and get a bit closer to the pigeon, hasn't he?
I can't understand why it won't let him near him, because they're used to humans.
Have you met him?
No. We're talking about Clive of India, or Clive.
That's tomorrow's show. qualifications. I found a pigeon on the A3.
Yes.
You don't hear that every day, do you?
No. Well, I hope he gets it back to him all right, to the owner.
So do I now. So do I. We need to check in with Clive tomorrow on what's happened with the pigeon. Would you like a round of applause, Anne?
Oh, if you want to give me one.
Oh, well, here it is. I'll tell you what, Anne, while you're here, I'm going to give you a board game as well.
Oh, gosh, no.
You're really? I am. I only am. It's all yours. Stay on the line. Stay on your line and we'll pop it in the post later today. All right?
Oh, bless you.
Oh, bless you. It's coming up to 1 o'clock. That's it for another day. If you missed any of it, you can listen back on Catch Up on Global Player and the LBC app. You can stay up to date with the stories and the opinions and the news categories can be put in the order you want. You can pause live radio. You can rewind live radio. You can listen to a range of podcasts like James O'Brien Daily, an hour of the best bits from my show every day, or Full Disclosure, an hour of me interviewing somebody every week. Download the... do you think I do too much self-promotion,
yeah,
Chi?
Do you know what you should do? You should get me to do that bit.
And then I'll do your bit. download the official LBC app for free. We'll do that tomorrow from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Sawbrick, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. Let's try that tomorrow, I think. I think it will add a touch of class to proceedings. At 3, I want to talk about the attitudes to and barriers in front of people with Down syndrome. At 2, Conservative MPs Robert Jenrick and Chris Philp have been pelted with glass bottles on a beach in northern France as they took it upon themselves to patrol it. A civilian group in Bournemouth are doing something similar. So what next? Sending out a posse? Where does this lead? And should politicians be doing it at all? We'll reflect on Keir Starmer's meeting with Volodymyr Zelensky. Not a lot of news about today. A-level results are in too. We'll look at that. But I begin with this question. Does your free speech extend to offering a conversation to a woman getting an abortion? A court in Scotland thinks the answer is yes. Do you?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Downing Street says there was a strong resolve to secure peace in Ukraine during a meeting between Sir Keir Starmer and Volodymyr Zelensky. Britain and Ukraine agree that tomorrow's summit between the US and Russia is a viable chance to make progress. Mr. Trump has warned of severe consequences if the Russian leader rejects a ceasefire. But Katya Denisova, news editor for the Kyiv Independent, says many Ukrainians are sceptical.
mainly because these talks will happen without Ukraine. Of course, Ukraine wants to see Trump's words and threats backed up by actions. And, you know, Trump's rhetoric still remains inconsistent.
A man accused of driving into crowds at Liverpool's Premier League victory parade is facing an additional 24 charges. 53-year-old Paul Doyle was originally charged with 7 offences after more than 100 people were injured in the city in May. Boys have outperformed girls in top A-level grades for the first time in 7 years. Overall, the number of students getting top grades has gone up, with more than a quarter getting an A star or an A. Thousands have been collecting their A-level, T-level and BTEC grades, like these pupils in West Bromwich.
I actually got way over what I expected.
Happy with my grades.
My parents were really excited. They're really happy for me. I got an AAB. I had an unconditional to a drama school, so I didn't really need the grades, but I'm really happy with what I got anyway.
More teenagers are also getting into their first choice of university than ever before. Growth in the UK economy slowed in the second quarter of this year, increasing by 0.3%. That compared to 0.7% growth in the first quarter. But the figure was stronger than widely expected by economists, and the Chancellor says it is positive news. And Chelsea players are going to donate some of their Club World Cup prize money to the families of Diogo Jota and his brother. They received a bonus of more than £11 million after winning the tournament. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 3 points at 91.68. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.16. LBC weather, very warm and humid today, but cooler than yesterday. Sunny spells with scattered showers and a risk of thunder in Scotland, a high of 28 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
They've been building up to this all summer. Dad tucks into a tight 360 to the boot. A 90-degree rotation into the back seat from Sammy. And Mum with a flawless double twist into the driver's seat.
Dive into a new Škoda with 0% APR across our range and an extra £1,000 towards your finance deposit with Solutions PCP. The Škoda Summer Splash Event. At local retailers until 31st of August. Indemnities may be required. Maximum terms apply depending on model. Minimum 20% deposit for Kamiq and Karoq. Delivery by 31st of December 25. Škoda Finance.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. The big political story of the day is that meeting earlier on between the Prime Minister Keir Starmer and the President of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky. I'll talk to John Sopel in half an hour, presenter of the News Agents podcast and the News Agents USA. We'll talk about that meeting and look ahead to tomorrow's meeting between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin of Russia. First, though, I want to talk about those buffer zones around abortion clinics in relation to a particular LBC exclusive, the case against the first anti-abortion protester to enter those buffer zones and say something in the form of a placard. The first case of a person being arrested under the new buffer zone laws in Scotland, as it happens, although the same laws now apply in England and Wales, her case has been dropped by prosecutors. Alan Zizinski is here to tell us more about the case, and we'll talk in a moment to Manna Mostaghim. Alan, tell us, take us back to this story and who it involves.
Yeah, sure. So this was back in February, where a 75-year-old grandmother by the name of Rose Doherty from Glasgow stood by herself silently across the street from an abortion clinic outside the Queen Elizabeth University Hospital. She was holding a large white sign which read, "Coercion is a crime. Here to talk only if you want to." And she was arrested on the spot for that, put in handcuffs and led away to a police car after being read her rights, which we do have the audio of.
The offence is that on this day and date, you did resolve yourself in a protest within a restricted zone that is likely to cause distress or harm to others, contrary to Section 4 of the Abortion Services Scotland Safe Zones Act, Scotland Act 2024. Do you understand that charge?
So as you hear there, the officer alleges that the actions, her actions, have broken the new buffer zone legislation, and that's what she was charged with. But she did not accept that, and for the last 6 months now, she has been preparing to claim in court that her actions did not indeed break those laws. And her argument would have been that nothing she actually did strays into the category of trying to influence or cause distress or harassment to anyone, as the legislation reads. However, we're never going to hear that argument because, as you say, Sheila, LBC has learned that public prosecutors have this week dropped the case. And speaking to Nick Ferrari this morning, Rose welcomed that decision.
It was a victory for common sense, but that conversation in the streets of Glasgow, indeed across Scotland, is not against the law. You know, conversation isn't a crime. It's not a protest. No, it's not. Conversation.
Now, I suspect you're wondering why have the public prosecutors, the COPFS, as they're known in Scotland, actually backed down here? Well, they did not give Rose a reason when they wrote to her, but I have been asking them, and what they've told me is that the decision was made, quote, after careful consideration of the facts and the circumstances of the case, including the available admissible evidence. So reading between the lines there, I think that suggests that what's happened here is they weighed it up and they felt that they were more likely than not to have lost the only argument that they could have made, really, which was that the mere presence of someone standing alone with a sign in a buffer zone, regardless of what it says, is enough to fall foul of the law.
But they found that that isn't the case, is what they seem to have found. And it's interesting, Alan, you'll know this as well as me, that US commentators and religious groups as well in the US kept an eye on this case, didn't they? It seems to have had an influence on them.
Yeah, I mean, probably more than an eye. Some of the social media posts, the views have racked up thousands and thousands of shares. And indeed, we actually saw the US State Department posting on X themselves, calling on the Scottish Government in relation to this case to respect freedom of expression. And that's the same department that we've seen this week criticising the UK for what they called serious restrictions on free speech. And we've also seen JD Vance talking very brazenly about abortion buffer zones. He's argued that they have placed the basic liberties of religious Britons in the crosshairs, and he also criticised the Scottish Government specifically back